All right, this episode of the podcast is brought to you by our store. If you haven't checked out our store in a while, I'd highly encourage you to do that. We're adding more products on an ongoing basis. Some of the latest products include the lung cleanse from our good friend, Dr. Ed Group over at Global Healing Center called Allertrex. And this is something that we've used and we really, really like. It's a great product to cleanse your lungs. We've also got the Magnetico sleep pads that you can get. We've got the Scalar Energy Rest Shield. We've got the Aura Wellness Shine product to help remineralize your teeth. We've got organic bedding, CBD oils, the Andreas Sacred Seed Oils, as well as the Rapid Release Technology, grounded bed sheets, all kinds of really, really cool and unique items that I think you're really going to love. So check out our store if you haven't checked it out in a while and consider purchasing through us to help support the show. And we're also brought to you by the Extreme Health Academy, which is going to be launching very, very soon in 2017. If you guys are unfamiliar with that, it's a new online membership website that we're going to be building. We are building to help take your health to the next level. And we're going to be offering all kinds of different courses, Q&A calls, where you're going to be able to get your health questions answered by doctors and nutritionists. We're also going to have a membership community. We're going to have lessons and programs and courses on organ systems of the body and how to heal specific ailments and diseases. Using natural methods. It's going to be a great, great place. So if you're interested in taking your health to the next level and joining a community of other like-minded individuals and joining a really cool program, check out the Extreme Health Academy, which we will put on this show page, which is extremehealthradio.com/509. Thank you so much, Deanne, for being on the show today.
Oh, thanks, Justin. Thanks so much for inviting me to be here. I'm really happy to meet you.
That's awesome. We somehow got connected up. I reached out to you, but I knew about your work, and we're talking about this before the show. But I was reading through your website last night and reading through your story, and wow, what a story that was. I found it really interesting that you had made so much progress in your cancer. For those who don't know, your website's deannawan.com, right?
Right.
And I read through your story, and it was interesting how you made so much progress, and then you relapsed a little bit with your cervical cancer.
Ovarian cancer,
I'm sorry, uh-huh. Yeah. So talk a little bit about that. I'm curious to know about that relapse you had.
Right. And so I had gotten to the point where I changed my diet, was eating 100% organic, raw, vegan, green juices, wheatgrass juice. And after about, I would say, close to a year of doing this, the tumor was dying from the inside out, and my elevated tumor markers. Actually, the tumor markers went from elevated to normal within the first 3 months of changing my diet.
Elevated to normal. So how high were they? What are the norm, those numbers?
It depends on the lab. Each lab has different reference range, but typically they're, you know, either, you know, 35 and below, or some are 20 and below. It just depends on which, you know, lab you have.
Interesting. So what were your numbers?
Well, mine started out at about, you know, 37, you know, and I think the reference range was 20. So after that, when I went on this raw vegan diet, it dropped back down to 10, and then it dropped to 6.
After 3 months?
Yes.
So what made you do this diet? Like, did you know about this kind of stuff before?
Well, what's interesting is this is 3 years before I even knew I had an inkling that I had cancer. I was actually in the Pentagon bookstore browsing for some books and wasn't looking for anything in particular. But as soon as I walked in, the clerk said to me, "You've got to get this book. This is the best book." And I looked, and the title was called The Hallelujah Diet.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No way. This was 3 years before?
This is 3 years before. This is before I was sick, before I knew there was anything wrong with me. I thought I was perfectly healthy.
No symptoms, no nothing?
No symptoms. And, you know, just being that I was in the military, you know, they always test you physically, medically. And so I thought everything was good.
So when you were finally diagnosed with cancer, you were having symptoms, right, at that point?
At that point, I started having symptoms, yes. But you know, even how I found out about it, it was all by an accident. I slipped on ice in a parking lot,
yeah.
Thought I had fractured my tailbone, and so they took me to the hospital and did a scan. It turns out I didn't fracture the tailbone, but they said, oh, by the way, you have what looks like a cyst on your left ovary.
Oh my gosh. So how old were you at the time when that happened?
I was 45 years old at the time.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So is it kind of a thing like with testicular cancer for men? It's like, you know how there's an age range where it's more prevalent in men? Is there an age range where this kind of cancer for you is more prevalent for women?
Yes. For ovarian cancer, it's typically in the 60s that women will get it.
Oh, really?
But what's interesting now, I think with the statistics, if you look at it, it's occurring younger and younger.
Interesting.
A couple years ago, I was at a cancer conference and met a 12-year-old girl who had it when she was 9.
Ovarian cancer.
Yes.
12 years old.
Yes.
At 9.
Yes.
How was she doing?
She was doing well. She actually had to go through surgery and is doing well right
now. Did they
now.
Take her ovaries out?
They might have. I don't know the exact details. But, you know,
that's
I just
crazy.
Can't imagine at such a young age.
Wow, I cannot imagine. So it's 9 years old. I wonder how does that even happen? I mean, are you seeing people, like you said, more? I mean, I'm seeing it too. So many younger people. I have a friend I went to high school with. She died, I don't know, 4 years ago of colon cancer.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I mean, at the time, she was 36.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
I had a really good friend of mine who was a bomber pilot in the Air Force, and he died at the age of 39 from colon cancer.
That's crazy.
I really think it's our environment, maybe how we, you know, grow our foods, you know, GMOs, pesticides, maybe even vaccines.
Mm-hmm. Possible, right?
Yes.
Yeah, my gosh. I'm seeing it now. I mean, I think I read some stat the other day where it's like, I think, is it 21,000 people a day get diagnosed or die from cancer? It's something incredible. I mean, around the world.
Oh, right. Yes.
So, I mean, that's just massive. I mean, that's a whole stadium full of people.
It's a lot.
I mean, think about all those lives that are now gone, that those children or those people will no longer have children. So future generations are affected. I mean, it's nuts.
It is nuts. I really think we need to pay attention. It's really, you know, a signpost saying some things we're just not doing it right. You know, I don't know if I answered your question though, you know, as to what you were asking about when I, you know, was doing well and then all of a sudden there was it got worse.
Oh, right, right.
And what had happened there is I thought everything was going so well and my doctor was really happy and he showed me how, you know, the tumor was dying from the inside out.
Uh-huh.
I thought everything was under control. I was somewhat naive about cancer at the time and I thought, well, that's great. I'm going to go back to working, you know, my 16 to 18 hour days in the Air Force. And then I traveled overseas for my job where I could not maintain that diet and regimen because
it's too strict.
Yeah. Being in Asia is just not a good idea sometimes to eat raw.
Oh, right, right.
Foods, you could pick up some pathogens. And
yeah.
So I got away from it. And then I'll never forget that the night that I landed back in the U.S. from Korea, I started hemorrhaging internally. So I could see the bruising on my abdomen. And it just was the start of kind of a rapid descent downhill.
Gosh.
From there.
So what did you do when you got diagnosed? So 3 years prior, you read that book, The Hallelujah Diet. So when you were diagnosed 3 years later, you kind of had this in your head?
I did. So 3 years ago when I read this book, I was really inspired by it because the author is George Malkmus, and he had a baseball-sized tumor in his colon, decided that he was going to heal, you know, with this organic raw vegan diet, and within a year, not only did that baseball-sized tumor disappear, but all other physical health issues that he had completely gone. And so I began to dabble with it because I thought, wow. And what I noticed is, you know, I just eliminated chicken and beef and pork from my diet.
Okay.
And I noticed that my energy level just kind of increased, and I felt better. And so when I got to the point where 3 years later, when I realized that I have cancer and I'm laying in a hospital bed, excruciating pain, especially in my liver, and they actually put me on a morphine IV, and I was really shocked because, it did absolutely nothing to relieve any of that pain. And so
morphine is so strong too. Morphine is so strong.
And I fully expected it to at least take, you know, the edge off, but it didn't. And so I thought, wow, I think I know what to do. And so right then I made the decision, I am going to just get rid of the fish and the dairy and just go, you know, raw vegan.
So during that 3-year period, you cut out beef, chicken, pork. Did you adopt any principles like juicing or like what did you do during those 3 years?
I did. I didn't juice regularly, but I juiced occasionally. Okay. I still remember it was a Jack LaLanne juicer that my sister gave me.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, made things out of that, a lot of juices out of that. But as soon as I found out how sick I was, then I started investing in, you know, slower speed juicers so that they don't oxidize. And then it just became my staple.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you use now? What kind of juicer?
I use an Omega juicer now.
Yeah.
But I also have the Norwalk.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's been on our wish list for a while.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I love it. I think there's nothing that compares to the Norwalk.
Is it hard to clean up? I've heard it's hard to clean up.
Yes, it is hard. And that's why I, you know, on a daily basis now, I use more of an Omega juicer because the Norwalk is very challenging to clean.
I hear the Norwalk produces so little oxidation that you can actually make like a batch of juice on a Sunday night and drink it every day, drink a little bit each day. Is that true?
It is. You can keep it for 72 hours.
Oh, okay.
And then if you, what I have are these vacuum seals. So if you suck the oxygen out, then that kind of helps preserve the enzymes further and then keep it refrigerated.
People have done that, I've heard, and they'll put like a little half teaspoon of honey in there for the enzymes keep more enzymatic activity inside the juice. But I wouldn't want to add the sugar, though.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
Maybe enzyme caps. But then if enzyme capsules would eat up...
Yeah, that might... Yeah, I've never added anything to it. But what I would do is I would eat some digestive enzymes at the same time that I was drinking juice.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, powerful, right?
Yes, to help you really absorb all the nutrients.
Ooh, so you were 45, you were on morphine in the hospital, and that wasn't working. The pain was too much.
It was horrible. I've never experienced such pain in my life. And so I remember something that Deepak Chopra had said that, you know, wherever you're feeling pain in your body, meditate, breathe into that area, and send it love and compassion.
Mm.
And so that is exactly what I did to help tolerate that pain. And it took several hours, but eventually the pain cleared up.
Was that the pain mostly in the liver?
It was.
Yeah?
It was. It was sharp, too. It literally felt like someone was stabbing my liver with a knife repeatedly.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it caused my body to convulse involuntarily.
So I want to get into what you did after that, but leading up your whole life before this, what do you think were some of the precipitating causative factors that could have led you into this kind of diagnosis, into this situation? Was there anything that happening, sort of the way you lived your life, or what do you think was going on that could have caused all this?
Well, I always thought I was healthy because growing up, we never had junk food in the house. So I didn't grow up eating chips or soda or anything like that.
Interesting.
And was very careful, in fact. And I was a nationally certified fitness instructor for 8 years.
Prior to all this, wow.
Yes. And so I was very conscientious of my diet all the time. I mean, granted, I ate everything. You know, I ate beef, chicken, pork.
It's more like the fitness kind of diet where it's like macro, you know, carbs, proteins, and that kind of thing, and making sure you don't get overweight and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. So weight was never an issue for me. I think some of the things that might have precipitated, I would say it kind of crosses, you know, into the emotional realm, you know, because as a young girl growing up, I wanted to actually be either a pianist, a gymnast, or a ballerina. And so when I talked to my parents about that, they said, oh, no, you can't make a living like that. It'll be really rough. And so the next thing you know, I end up applying to go to the Air Force Academy studying physics And then I come out as a physicist in the Air Force. And
jeez,
so
it can be more diametrically opposed to playing piano.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that could have been contributed partially in that I believe now that it's important if you have something in your heart that you're passionate about, that's what you ought to pursue in life.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing with people. I think not doing the work that they know they should do and being called for a higher purpose and doing something that makes them feel fulfilled. I think the inability to do that, I think eventually life's going to send you a message.
Absolutely.
Don't you think?
I do. I think life kind of whispers at you in the beginning, and if you don't listen, it gets louder and louder.
Yeah. Yeah, because ultimately, if you're supposed to be a singer and you're an accountant, then that gift that you have to sing, or to be able to touch people's lives in a way that's going to change their life, if you ignore that subtle message to yourself your whole life and you decide to go off track and be an accountant, I mean, it's not similar to, you know, dying or anything, but it's like you're robbing the world of whatever that gift that you have is.
Right.
And so wouldn't it make sense that you would be sort of slapped in the face, say, hey, get back on track, do what you're supposed to be doing, you know?
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, if you look at cancer, metaphorically, it's, you know, a group of cells in your body. Your body has created them and they've become renegade. You know, they're not communicating with the other cells in your body. And so it represents to me a lack of integration. You know, there's a part of you that you're not either allowing to express or to come out. And so
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that part of us that wants to, I don't know, pursue some career, some passion, or do whatever it is we're supposed to be doing, it's almost like the cancer represents that in the way that it's sort of renegade, like you said, and it wants to go do its own thing, and it's trying to show you that you should go do your own thing and do what you're called to do.
Right, right. And then what I did was, you know, being in the military, I intellectually convinced myself that I love this job, and I did. You know, I mean, I love being able to travel all over the world and just do some amazing things in the physics and the science and technology world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the lifestyle in the military also contributed, you know, in terms of long hours, high stress, and then all the mandatory vaccines.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of that, isn't there?
Absolutely. I worked with materials also that were radioactive, you know, and we know that radioactivity causes gene mutations.
Jeez.
And I fully believe that I acquired the cancer kind of on my own. You know, people like to think about genetics, but I was genetically tested and tested negative.
Really?
Yes.
For the kind of cancer or just
any? For the kind of cancer that I had.
Interesting. So your genes expressed it even though it showed up negative.
Right.
Yeah.
Meaning that I didn't inherit this cancer from my family.
So now my question is along the lines of this doing your passion thing, because you wanted to be a ballerina and a piano player and you did something else too? Or you were interested in something else?
Oh, a gymnast.
A gymnast. So I'm trying to figure out. So now you're doing, you know, you're in the health field and helping people with their health now. Would that be considered a passion now that replaced those three things you wanted to do initially? Like, do you feel like you're on the right path?
I do, and I don't feel like it's a replacement. I actually feel that the health path that I've chosen now is actually the main purpose under which the music and some of these arts can be a part of.
Okay.
So
you're doing music and art and that now.
Yes. What I'm wanting to do is actually create like a CD of music I've composed on a piano, you know, that can be healing for people because
that's
I
awesome.
Know for me, music was huge to lift my spirits when I was going through, you know, just really tough times.
That's crazy. That's so cool. So you're using both of those, you know, kind of converging those two worlds, the creativity aspect of what you thought you should do, and then also helping people using that music to help people with their health.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's going to come in phases, but that's my, eventual long-term goal of what I want to do.
Wow, that's interesting. Man, this cancer epidemic. Okay, so working with radioactive materials and the vaccines and probably the probably the long hours as well, because you said, I think on your website, it was 16 to 18 hours a day that you were working and traveling a lot too?
And traveling a lot too, yes.
So that's a burden on the immune system as well.
It's huge.
Yeah.
The time zone change and...
lack of sleep and just being in the air, right? The radiation from the planes and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it takes a toll, you know, when you're young, you think you can kind of handle everything and you just don't think about it.
Yeah.
So I didn't. And then I kind of realized that here I am, I'm in my 40s, and it's kind of like, here's my report card of how I've been doing all these years, and it's not good.
Wow. So, okay, so that kind of leads up. So your diet all during your life was pretty good?
It was pretty good, yeah.
Pretty good?
Yeah, I always kind of try to balance the starches with, you know, vegetables and meat.
Not a lot of processed food, corn chips and all that?
No.
Processed American food? Okay, wow. So now you're 45 and you're laying in the hospital bed, and so you're meditating into your organs, a la Deepak Chopra.
That's right.
We won't tell anybody about that during that time. So then what happened? So you were the doctors, they were trying to get you to do chemo and radiation and...
Well, they wanted to do surgery, and at the time I was ready to do surgery because I was in so much pain, I just wanted them to... you know, do whatever they had to do to get rid of the pain. And what happened is I developed a fever. And when that occurred, it's interesting because they were going to initially put me on antibiotics, but then the doctor, I think she had a lot of wisdom because she said to me, you know, you didn't really react very well to all the other medications we put you on with the morphine and everything. Because what had happened, just to fill you in, so the morphine didn't take the pain away, but then it made me nauseous. So then they gave me anti-nausea medication, which then created constipation. So then they gave me stool softeners, which then created diarrhea. And when that happened, they said, oh, you have... C. diff, which is, you know, Clostridium difficile, a bacterial infection. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't think I have this infection that you guys think I have.
Wow.
I mean, they went through everything where they quarantined me, you know, and people had to come in with masks and gloves. And
yeah, my mom was like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's really weird.
It is weird. And I just said, I don't believe I have that. I think my body is just reacting to all these medications. And so then I asked them, you know, can you just take all this medication away from me and, you know, take this IV out of me, in fact, because I don't want anything.
Mm-hmm.
I had to sign waivers to do that. And so
that's crazy. You had to sign waivers to do that for your own health. That's so amazing.
It is, because they would be liable, because they said, well, anyone having abdominal symptoms needs to be automatically put on
an IV.
That's just
the standard of care, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
okay.
So then, you know, getting back to your question, once I realized that that didn't work, I said, well, just, you know, get rid of it. And when I developed the fever, the doctor knew, well, you know, we may not want to put you on antibiotics right away. Let's do a watch and wait approach and see what happens. And I was so thankful. I mean, it took another 3 days for the fever to clear, but it cleared.
How high were you?
I was probably about 100 degrees.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So they decided to wait it out, and I'm glad. And so then when that happened, what really surprised me is the pain resolved, the fever resolved on its own, no medication. And so then the doctor comes to me and says, you know, we need to release you now because we're not giving you any pain medication or anything, and, you know, we're going to discharge you. So I thought, oh, great. You know, and I thought, wow, you're not going to do surgery?
Wow. So at this point, you had already been diagnosed and everything?
They told me, because they had ruled out ovarian torsion and all these other things, and they said based on how it looks, you know, it's ovarian cancer. And so then when I went back to the military doctor, because I was in a civilian hospital at this point in time.
Had they done a biopsy at this point?
They did not, but they were fully convinced.
It was.
Because they could tell there were septations and, you know, it was a complex mass. It was not a simple cyst anymore.
How big was it?
At that time, it was 6 centimeters.
How big is that, do you think?
That's about 3 inches, roughly.
Really?
In diameter, yes.
Wow, that's big. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was at that time, so they let you go, and then you went back to the military doctors.
Yeah, and so then the military doctor wanted me to start chemotherapy right away, and that did not sit well with me, and so I immediately contacted the people. Remember the book I mentioned to you,
right.
The Hallelujah Diet? Well, uh-huh. There are Hallelujah lifestyle centers throughout the U.S.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So okay. I contacted one of them and went down there, and that's how I learned how to really fully immerse myself in this organic, raw, vegan lifestyle.
Do you know it's interesting you brought up that book. Do you know, of Chris Work? We were talking about him before the show. Do you know his story in that book?
In that book?
No, in terms of how it relates to that book. It's pretty interesting.
No, I don't.
Yeah, he was, as you know, diagnosed with colon cancer. And it was going through the same thing where the doctor, I think he had the surgery, the tumor removed. And then the doctors were like following up saying, you have to have chemotherapy, mm-hmm. radiation. I think it was like a Thursday, and they gave him till the weekend to kind of figure all this stuff out. It was something crazy like that. And then he just prayed and he said, God, I need some information because I don't feel right about the chemotherapy. Same with you. And the next day, one of his dad's, I may be getting this wrong, but one of his dad's business partners who lives in Alaska heard about the diagnosis he had. And that book showed up on his porch the next day.
Really?
Amazing, right?
That is amazing.
Isn't that weird?
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause when I saw it at the Pentagon bookstore, I wasn't even into diets. I didn't believe in diets.
Yeah.
But when I saw the Hallelujah, I found that intriguing, and that's what, prompted me to buy it.
It's such a, crazy thing. So you went, now at this point, what day, do you remember what day or what time of the week or whenever you saw your military doctor? Was he pushing for chemo quick?
Yes. I remember, in fact, I do remember that it was a Thursday evening when she called me because she had run another series of tests and scans.
Uh-huh.
And that's when she says, you got to do chemo.
Wow.
And that was a Thursday night, and it was like, I think it was October 2011, if my memory serves me correctly. And so from that Thursday, I booked a flight, and Sunday I was down at the Hallelujah Lifestyle Center.
Whereabouts?
This is in Florida.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that Sunday, a couple days later, you're down there.
Yes. And it was, I'm so glad I did that, because from the time she called me, I couldn't sleep anymore. I mean, I would cry in the night, because in my mind, I just felt like, wow, I'm going to die. And not only that, but I'm going to suffer and be in pain, and it's going to be horrific.
Oh, man.
And so I was terrified. And what's really interesting is as soon as I show up at this Hallelujah Lifestyle Center, as soon as I walked through those doors, I literally felt God's peace just fall on me. And I felt like a normal person again, not one that was just given a death sentence. And that gave me the hope to learn to just, do whatever I could to try to turn the odds around in my favor.
Did the doctors give you any sort of, how doctors love to give you, you've got 6 months to live, or did they do any of that with you?
They did that towards the end so I get to the point where after I came back from Korea, a few months after that, it spreads. The tumor begins to grow again. So,
wait a sec. So, was Korea after the Hallelujah Center in Florida?
Yes, and okay. And so I went to a lot of places. So, from the Hallelujah Lifestyle Center, I went to a place called Be in Health in Georgia.
Oh wow!
Which it's a guy, Henry Wright, that runs the place, and he teaches that 80% of all chronic illnesses have a spiritual root.
Mm-hmm.
And I really firmly believe that. So I spent time there studying that. And then I also went to the Hippocrates Health Institute.
Back to Florida,
yeah. Exactly. And that really really, Hippocrates just really changed a lot of what was going on in my physiology for the better.
Wow. How long were you in there at Hippocrates?
I went through their 3-week life transformation program.
How is that?
It's fantastic.
Is it?
It's the place that I would recommend anyone dealing with any sort of health issue, but if you have cancer, most definitely to go there.
Wow.
And so if you think about it, I did the worst possible thing. So I fully detoxified my body, and then I go back to working 16 to 18 hour days, and I go overseas.
Oh, you did all of this stuff after... Okay, so you were... Yeah, so there's that 3-month period where you went back to your lifestyle. So I thought this was after that, but this was during that time.
This is during. So this is, the whole chronology of it.
Okay.
So that's what really reversed all the good progress I had made.
Oh, my gosh.
And so then I was told then that I had peritoneal carcinoma. You know, the peritoneum is the lining, the abdominal lining. Uh-huh. And at that point, they told me, while surgery is still an option, it's not going to have that great of a chance for success. So my doctor said to me, the best thing you could do is to just strengthen your immune system. And so...
This is your medical doctor?
This is a medical doctor, yes.
Interesting. Wow.
And so I continued to do that. But then within a few months after that, it spreads to my lungs. So both of my lungs collapse, fill with fluid.
I read that.
And then at that point in time, the military doctor places me into hospice because I need to be put on oxygen. And
so this is after Hippocrates, after the center in Georgia, Be Healthy. What's it called?
Be in Health.
Be in Health. This is after all that stuff.
Yeah, and after, I studied the Garrison therapy. I went through their course twice, and,
Did you actually go there? Is it in Mexico, right? Is that where it is?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't go to Mexico. Okay. I went through their online training program.
Okay.
And then I also studied the macrobiotic diet as well. Actually went to one of the cushy conferences.
Mm-hmm. So this was all during the... Or this was initially, and then you went back after all that to working long hours. So during that time that you had done and completed all these processes and programs, had your tumor shrunk? Or I'm sorry, had the tumor shrunk?
It did. It was shrinking, and then it was dying from the inside out. And my tumor markers were normal, and my doctor was elated.
So how much had it shrunk, do you think?
It didn't shrink by a lot. It was very slight,
okay.
But what's interesting is then, my doctor showed me on the scan and says, look, that's central necrosis of the tumor.
Oh, really?
Yes. So he said, this is great. And he says, and you've lost all your visceral fat, which is a good prognostic indicator. And so he said, this is the most perfect scan I've seen. And so I thought everything was good.
Oh, man.
And I just really kind of underestimated the complexity of cancer.
So the tumor was no longer just relegated to your ovaries. It was in your stomach, and was it in your lungs too, or no?
Well, this is what's interesting. If you back up to when I was, first told I had ovarian cancer, at that point in time, the first time I'm in a hospital, there was actually a lung nodule as well.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah.
Excuse me.
And I also had, there was a tumor in my, it's really odd, but in my left leg.
Oh.
And in the back as well, in between the ribs.
Wow.
And I also had one under my right arm.
Oh, my gosh.
So what's interesting is those tumors actually disappeared.
As a result of doing all these different
protocols
and things.
Right. But the tumor that was in my left ovary, that one was too large. And by the time after I went, and did all the damage that I did, it actually tripled in size in a span of 3 months. So it was growing very aggressively.
So if it was 6 inches, so it was 18 inches?
Well, no. So it basically, it got as large as 27 centimeters, which is about a foot.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I look, at this point, I look huge.
Yeah, you had a distended stomach and things?
Extremely distended. I was edemic, so I was retaining a lot of fluid. I would gain 10 pounds in one day from fluid.
That's crazy.
It was awful. I just could not imagine.
So you knew, so progressively during that 3 month period when you went back to your sort of old life, you were progressively getting worse and starting to notice different things. And is that kind of what happened?
I didn't notice it. I mean, I noticed, you know, maybe there was more congestion in a pelvic area, but I really thought everything was great, you know, and, and I know I ate things I shouldn't have eaten, you know, when I was overseas, but I just felt in my mind, I thought, well, if I don't eat anything, I'm going to starve.
Right, right.
And so I learned the hard way, because at that point in time when I came back and I started hemorrhaging and just all of a sudden the tumor is more pronounced. So before, you know, you had to kind of really dig deep to feel it, but now it was like front and center in my abdomen, and it was hard, and I thought, wow.
So at this point, what were your colleagues, your friends and family, what were they saying about all this? Did you have any input from them that was either negative or positive?
I did. I had friends and even some family members that said, you know, Deanna, I know you want to try to heal naturally, but I think you're doing the wrong thing.
They would tell you that.
They would. I had other friends that said, you really got to do chemo. You know, don't analyze, don't think as much as you think, because, you know, I was really into researching. And they just said, you just have to just don't think and just listen to the doctors. And so...
Gosh, that's so crazy, right?
I know.
Don't think, just listen to the doctors. Wow.
Yeah, because, I mean, I understand sometimes, you know, we can get in our own ways by, you know, being a little bit too analytical. But at that point in time, okay, so when I'm presented again with the option to do chemo, and at this point in time, the oncologist is putting a lot of pressure on me. That's when I prayed, and I said, God, if you want me to do the chemo, I will, because at this point I'm told I have 4 weeks left to live.
They told you that?
Yes.
That's crazy. But man, I mean, I can't. Wow. So what did the, so did they call you and tell you that? Did they come?
No, no, this was face to face.
Oh man.
And so then when I prayed, what I heard back was to ask for the cytology report. Now, they had just drawn out fluid out of my abdomen the night before, and it was literally like bags of blood that they were drawing out of me. Normally, the fluid should be like a straw yellow color, but in my case, it was like
it's
bags of blood.
Blood, yeah.
Yeah. And I learned subsequently when I talked to a cancer researcher who used to work at Johns Hopkins, she told me that 100% of the cases when it's blood red like that, it's going to be cancer.
Wow.
You know, in that fluid. And so when I asked for that report, the oncologist said to me, no, we don't have time to wait for that report. 100%, it's going to be malignant. And if you don't do chemo, I'm going to put you right back into hospice where you will most certainly die. Those were his exact words to me.
Oh, my gosh. That is crazy. That is just, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, nothing can ever prepare you to hear those kinds of words.
No. I mean, at 45 years old, too, I mean, it's like your prime of your life, you know? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, I think, but yeah, that's right. I might have been 47 because this is like a span of a couple years now.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so it was really rough. I just thought to myself, wow, I just spent, you know, over 20-something years, you know, in the Air Force, and now I'm not going to even live to see my retirement. It really felt like just the carpet was being pulled out from under me.
So how much, so we learn a lot about... you know, I really resonated with what you're saying about where you studied in Georgia, and about the emotional spiritual connection to disease. And I'm just curious, how much of that ownership did you take when the doctor told you that? Because, you know, a lot of times we put so much of our health and trust and the things that we need to do in this life in the hands of perceived authority figures, you know, and other people know better than I do and blah, blah, blah. The doctors know more about my body than I do. Did you immediately believe that and take it on? Or was your first thought and reaction, he's right, I'm going to die? Or was it, no, I'm going to fight this? Or no, I need to learn to love my cancer? Like, what was your reaction to him telling you that after having gone to that course and kind of understanding that side of it?
Well, my initial reaction was one of sadness because I was mourning. It looked like I was not going to be able to live beyond the summer because this was in June when it occurred. But then I just thought to myself, you know, he's only telling me that based on his experience and on statistics. Mm-hmm. So he really doesn't know. And I, you know, because I'm a Christian, I believe that God is really the ultimate author and finisher of my life. And so I thought, you know, whose report are you going to believe? Are you going to believe the doctor's report or are you going to believe God? And so that's why I prayed and I asked God, I really need your guidance. You know, I'll do chemo, but I need to hear this directly from you because with my background in the military, I understand just the effects of chemotherapy because, you know, the chemotherapy program was actually came out of the military's chemical warfare program.
Right. We've heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy, right?
Isn't
there some involvement with the makers of Agent Orange and things?
There's some
connection between Agent Orange and chemotherapy?
Well, I know there's connections between Agent Orange and development of cancer.
Oh, right.
But yeah, there's like mustard agents and things like that they've taken.
And put into chemo.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Whew, okay. So, golly, I just can't imagine. I cannot imagine being told that and your reaction to it and just having to deal with that. And were you alone when they told you that or did you have people with you?
I only had my aunt and cousin with me. So I didn't have my immediate family because my mom was actually in the ICU at the same time that I was in this condition. And my family's all in California and here I am on the East Coast.
Okay.
So, and so at that point in time, I still remember my aunt and cousins were the ones who really encouraged me to do chemo because they felt like it was my only hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, giving a month to, but that's interesting though, that because usually when someone's given a month to live, it's almost like they don't do chemo or anything like that, you know?
Well, that's exactly right. It's kind of interesting that he would have recommended that to me given my condition. I just felt like I was just too weak to even go through chemo.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, well, if I'm only going to have that long to live, I kind of want to keep, you know, what I have right now without worsening it
mm-hmm.
by adding poisons to my body.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
So where did you go from there?
So what's interesting is, you remember I asked for the cytology report. He didn't want to do it, but finally I convinced him that, you know, if you just let me look at this, I'll give you my decision on the chemo. So it took another 2 days for them to do the analysis, but when the report came back, he came to me and he says, you know, your intuition to wait for this report was a good one because it came back negative for cancer cells.
Wait a second. So I don't understand.
He fully expected there to be cancer cells in the fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, because there weren't, he says, this opens up the opportunity for you to have surgery. And so I said yes immediately to that.
Okay. And to get this big tumor out.
To get this, yeah. And then he had to find a surgeon who was willing to do it because it was huge. And so he found a surgeon in Baltimore, and the surgeon agreed to accept me. But it took another 3 days before I would be able to be admitted there because they had no beds available for me. And in the meantime, my blood levels are so critically low. I have fluid around my heart, and you know they had to give me 5 blood transfusions.
It's crazy they would wait 3 days with someone who, if the doctor did give them, you know, 4 weeks to live, 3 days is a lot of time. And so it's crazy that they wouldn't have rushed you in right away.
Well, they didn't have any beds available, so it was really rough. And I didn't think I was going to be able to hang on, quite honestly, because I was gasping for air by this time, and it just didn't matter how much oxygen the nurses cranked up. It just, you know, if your lungs can't inflate, you can't absorb oxygen.
So were you in additional, obviously, pain too at this time?
Tremendous pain.
Any morphine or anything during this time?
No, I wanted to be in touch with my body. They offered pain medication to me, but I wanted to be able to think and to feel.
And make decisions.
And to make decisions.
And be sort of with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was so swollen, it literally felt like the skin on my legs and my feet were going to crack and split. I was really afraid. I mean, it was very painful because, you know, the skin on your feet are just not designed to stretch.
It's pliable, yeah.
Yeah, and so I had to be in a bed kind of like in a V shape. I had my legs elevated.
Okay.
And then my head had to be elevated because if I lay down, I would literally drown in my own fluids.
Wow. Wow, so the so 3 days goes by, and then you're able to have the surgery?
So they transfer me, but then when I get there, the first surgeon looks at me, and he says, you know, we don't even know if you can have surgery because you look too emaciated at this point in time. And they thought I might be experiencing heart failure because I had fluid around my heart. And then they also, they had to drain the fluid out of my lungs as well.
How much do you think you lost? How much weight do you think you lost during that time?
I actually gained weight because of the fluid. So I was, parts of me were thin, and I found out after I went through all of this, when all the fluid finally drained out of my body, I kind of found out how much I really weighed, and so I lost probably about 15 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So the first surgeon says no.
He not only says no, but he says to me, if we do surgery, we're going to do a full complete hysterectomy. And at that point, I just said, no, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I said to him.
Let's not overkill here.
Right. I said to him, if there's any healthy organs, I want you to leave them in place. I just only want you to remove whatever's diseased and... If there's any red swollen lymph nodes, I don't want you to sample them or remove any of my lymph nodes. Please just leave them in place. Well, he became angry with me and said to me, well, if you don't, I really want to ensure, you know, greatest chance of success for you. If you don't want to do it this way, then you can take your health care elsewhere.
Wow.
And I didn't like that, and so...
That's not a good attitude.
No, it's not.
That's not
So I kind of told the hospital staff, hey, you know, I don't want him to cut on me. I would like to have this other surgeon do it because I just really believe this is my body, the body I have to live with, you know, for the rest of my life.
So when you go about doing that, do you have to put that in writing and get it signed by both parties that they won't remove anything they don't think is diseased? Like, how does that work?
Well, what they do is before you go in for surgery, they will give you all this paperwork that says all the possible outcomes. And so for me, you know, death was a potential outcome, and they told me I was going to lose a lot more blood. And so in addition to the 5 blood transfusions I already had, they will give me more transfusions during surgery. And so you read the fine print, and that's kind of what you see, all the things they can do.
Okay.
And so I realize that legally they could do whatever they want because I had signed the paperwork for
right.
that. But I spoke personally to the surgeon, and I said to him, hey, look, can you please just be more conservative with the surgery and only remove diseased organs.
So this first guy kind of, you told the staff you didn't want this guy working on you, and then they said, okay, we'll bring in another doctor, and that's who you eventually worked with?
I actually named the doctor that I wanted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I knew his name from the oncologist I had at the previous hospital.
Okay.
And so he said, yeah, this guy is great. He's a highly sought-after surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first was admitted to this other hospital, I don't know why they brought in this other surgeon. He was part of the team, I think.
Okay.
But I just really believe in having a teamwork partnership approach with the doctor.
Right.
So
he ended up doing the surgery. How long was the surgery? And how did he come back and say it was successful?
Yes, he did. It's interesting because they prepped me and they said that the surgery would take 4 hours at least. It ended up taking, I think, an hour and a half.
Really?
Yes. And
I never know. Is that good or bad? You know, like with surgeries, like.
I think it's
case,
a good thing.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, less oxidation to your tissue.
Yeah, that's
being
true.
Exposed. And I didn't require the blood transfusions they were talking about. And They told me, you know, they told me beforehand that I was going to wake up and be in the ICU and have a tube down my throat and not to be alarmed. But when I came to, I was actually in my own room again. And although I was breathing, I wasn't breathing that well because soon thereafter, the fluid began to return into my lungs. And so then I had to be put back on oxygen. But I ended up, you know, surviving that, which was to me just such a gift because even though I was in excruciating pain, because I have an incision that basically runs from an inch above my umbilical all the way down to the pelvic bone. So I kind of got split open like that.
In the front or the back?
In the front.
In the
of
front,
me.
Yeah.
Yes.
Phew. So.
But I was so weak after that that I couldn't even lift up a dinner plate. So I had to go through months of rehabilitation to rebuild my severely atrophied muscles, you know.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really interesting because all the fluid eventually came out of my body, even though nurses told me that I would have to be put on medication. But a couple weeks after the surgery, they did the pathology, which confirmed that I had this very rare malignant form of ovarian cancer called granulosa cell tumor. So then they told me, you know, we're going to have to do another major surgery followed by 6 rounds of chemo. They gave me 3 weeks to think about it, and during this time, I already decided I am not going to do any more surgery or chemo because this surgery was rough enough.
Yeah, and they wanted another surgery 3 weeks later.
Well, they wanted me to go back to the surgeon where he would tell me that, you know, this is what we're going to do.
Wow.
And so I had applied to go to Paracelsus Clinic in Switzerland to deal with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I got accepted there, but when I followed up with the surgeon, what really surprised me is he said, you know, based on how things look, I don't see a need for you to have surgery or chemo.
So he said this 3 weeks later?
Yes.
When you went in to sort of talk to him again and saying, do I have to have the second one? What's my prognosis? Where do I go? And that's when he said that.
Yes.
Why would he say that, do you think?
I think because...
Were there more tests he looked at?
Well, yeah, there were blood work that he looked at. I don't really fully understand it because at that point in time, my tumor markers were actually quite elevated.
Uh-huh. Even after the
surgery. But I think that's normal due to the inflammation from the surgery as well.
Okay, yeah. Wow. So when he told you that, you said, okay, that's kind of good news. I don't have to worry about the second surgery, but now I can go to Switzerland.
Yeah, but then at that point in time, I just decided, you know what, I think I'm going to just try to continue to do some of the things I've already learned and not put my body through the stress of traveling to Switzerland.
Yeah.
So then I let that go by the wayside, and then I had people coming in to help me with the diet and lifestyle.
Wow. So did you tell the doctor what you were going to do or what you were planning on doing?
No, I didn't.
No.
I encountered, you know, the past several years up until this point, I had faced so much opposition. I can't tell you the number of doctors who became angry with me.
Really?
And the very uncomplimentary things they wrote about me.
Really?
In my medical record. Yes.
Wow. Like what kinds of things can you share?
One of the oncologists wrote that I was not prudent, you know, because I questioned what he was recommending.
Uh-huh.
And then I also went to the NIH, you know, the National Institutes of Health.
Uh-huh.
And they said of me, they listed 5 diagnoses, so they talked about cancer and all that. But the 5th diagnosis, they wrote mistrust of the medical system. And that
was a diagnosis?
Can you believe
that? Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
It is crazy. And I went to them for a second opinion. So this was after they did the pathology for that tumor that they had just cut out of me. I just simply wanted them to do a second opinion of the pathology, which I thought was well within my rights as a patient.
Yeah. Oh, you could have 3 or 4 opinions.
Absolutely.
Your body, right?
Yes. But that's how they interpreted that.
Mistrust of the medical system. Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things where, you know, you just... It's very revealing, I think, when you see that, because they won't say it to your face.
So they'll write it, and then most likely the patients never read those, right? Is that kind of
right,
the case?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, they don't typically read them.
So it's almost like they're writing about you officially to put it on the record, and then they just kind of assume that patients don't end up reading that stuff.
Right. And then I had another doctor who really ridiculed me, and she said, if you think that juice can cure cancer, why don't you think the NIH is doing research on that?
It's amazing, isn't it? I find that the deeper someone goes in their educational pursuits, the more difficult it is for those types of people to finally wake up to the extent that of what's really going on, you know? Because the answer is so obvious, yet how come someone who is so educated, like your doctor, that doctor who said that, how is it that you can't see that? You know, it's really weird.
It is weird. But I think that, yeah, they just get so entrenched in the way they're trained that that's all they know. And anything that they don't know about, it's like it's just not.
It's not even relevant.
It's not relevant at all. I actually had one doctor say to me, she was an oncologist, and she said something kind of similar. She says, well, you're a smart woman, you know, you're a physicist, but sometimes the smartest people can be the dumbest people too. I mean, she said that to my face.
She said that to you.
Yeah, and I just thought, well, you know, you've kind of answered my question. I don't think I want to work with you.
I'll take my services elsewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Yeah, that is. It's so ironic, isn't it? It's just so ironic.
Yeah.
Wow. So you didn't choose to tell the doctors anything that you're going to do. And I think that's probably a good idea because, you know, there is some sort of a spell, I think, that doctors have, this medical industry sort of spell. And I'm not against doctors at all. I mean, a lot of them are great people. It's just unfortunate the system that we're in doesn't allow a doctor to really care for his patients and really his or her patients and doesn't really allow them to do research and to move beyond the idea that this whole thing that they're involved in is an industry designed to make money. So it's like they're just so bogged down in the particulars of day-to-day, seeing patients, paying the bills, trying to keep my marriage together, trying to, mm-hmm. you know, take care of the kids and all this stuff. So it's nothing against doctors. It's just that I think that for people that go so far in that path and then in that career when they start creating debt for themselves and houses and cars and mortgages and second homes and all this stuff, mm-hmm. it gets really challenging because they've been lured into this lifestyle and now they have to sustain this lifestyle. So, you know, if someone were to come along and upset the apple cart and show them that their entire basis, their healing basis of everything that they've learned and studied and given their life for is or might not be true, that's a huge blow to your ego because who wants to say I was wrong? Who wants to say that mm-hmm. I spent, you know, 8 years studying in medical school and all of it was a waste of time and people can heal themselves on their own and blah, blah, blah. I mean, people don't want to admit that.
No,
and that's understandable.
It is. I mean, and I fully agree with me. I'm not trying to bash doctors. I have utmost respect for them. I know mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my surgeon.
Yeah.
And I had another doctor who actually was the one who had recommended that I go to Hippocrates Health Institute and was open.
A medical doctor told you that.
He was really huge on you know, taking a nutritional approach in addition to, you know, what he was recommending.
God bless people like that, you know.
Yes.
Cuz it's important there needs to be more of that. And I think that it's really challenging for doctors to be able to stand up and say that cuz there is a point. I mean, I've talked to so many people, doctors, there's a point where if they start recommending too much natural, they're you know, they start to become looked at by the FDA or the, you know, people who govern them, take their license away and things like that. So
absolutely.
It's really important, I think.
I even had one ND, a naturopathic physician, who said to me, you can't tell anyone that I'm treating you for cancer. You know, just don't say anything like that.
A natural guy said that.
A natural guy said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're just going there to get healthier.
That's right.
I'm just going to get healthy.
That's right.
Wow. So you didn't tell your doctors anything. You just decided to...
Well, the one doctor that recommended that I go to Hippocrates, I kept in touch with him throughout, and so he knew exactly what I was doing.
Does he now follow you, and you keep up to date with him?
Periodically. I'm really just followed by the surgeon who, you know, looks at me. Basically, I do blood work like every 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's a weird thing because like it's just so challenging the way people look at statistics and people and trying to gather. I mean, you know all about the 5-year statistic mm-hmm. with cancer and you being officially cured, things like that. And it's just really challenging because, you know, if someone were to do a natural, and they only did natural and they lived for 4 years instead of 5, then the doctors would really jump all over someone like that and say, yeah, it doesn't work and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But if someone does chemotherapy radiation, they die after 4 years. It's just the cancer was just too big and there's nothing we could do. And so it's like yeah. It's designed to be self-protecting. In
yes.
a way.
And you know, the language they use when that occurs, they say that the patient failed the treatment.
Right, right.
So it's really the onus is on the patient.
Yeah, yeah. It's so, it's all structured in such a way as to accentuate the victory when there may not be a victory and mitigate the losses mm-hmm. so that there's this public light that people look at where the only option to cure a cancer is the medical approach.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, you know, you do a lot of interviews, you do a lot of talks, you know, you speak and you do all this kind of stuff and, you know, being here and we talk to a lot of people and, you know, it's awesome that the internet allows us to get this kind of information out.
Absolutely.
So people can learn and just, you know, learn from your story, you know.
Right.
It's
right.
Awesome.
I really think it behooves each of us to do our own research and mm-hmm. be our own best self-advocate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what did you start doing right away after all this? You left the doctor's office and what you started changing your life? You said you brought your family in to help you a little bit.
Oh, right. I brought in a medical missionary.
Uh-huh.
Who helped me, and I brought in a chef as well who knew about the whole Hippocrates diet
mm-hmm.
and went through months of rehabilitation. So I worked with physical and occupational therapists and was just trying to heal. And during this time, I got certified through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I began to health coach because I thought, wow, this has just been such an educational journey for me. I really want to be able to share this information so that hopefully people don't have to end up, you know, in hospice, you know, kind of facing their mortality like mm-hmm. I was, or even if they are, that there's always hope, you know, to mm-hmm. never lose hope because
yeah.
things can turn around. I just believe that if you just give the body half a chance, you know, through proper nutrition, that the body can just do amazing, wondrous things and turning things around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get in the way so often, don't we, of our own healing. Like a body is constantly seeking homeostasis.
Yes.
It's constantly trying to get healthy. There's a doctor on that is a friend of ours, and he talks about perpetual healing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the body is always, regardless of what diagnosis or label you want to slap on something, any disease process, he says, is an invisible process. The mm-hmm. high cholesterol, the tumor, this is just a physical representation of some invisible process that's going on in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body's always healing in every moment. And so it's a completely different mindset from medical conventional thought where, oh my gosh, I got this spot on my thing. What's wrong with me? Or what's my body's breaking down? Or, you know, my body's doing this, is trying to kill me or whatever. It's a completely different thought. And you almost have to like reinforce that mindset all the time that my body knows exactly what it's doing. If I've had diarrhea for 3 weeks, it may be indicative of something, but the body's trying to cleanse this toxin out of me. And so it's just a different mindset completely.
It is. And I fully, appreciate that because I just thought to myself, there's an innate wisdom that's designed in our bodies mm-hmm. and we really just need to trust it and not, you know, medicate to cover up the symptoms because mm-hmm. there's some kind of underlying cause. And for cancer, I just really believe in identifying, well, what's the root cause or causes, you know, that contributed to this? And if we can somehow remove these causes, then maybe the body has a chance to get back to that homeostasis.
What are you finding? What are your suspicions as to the top 4 or 5 things you think that are causing cancers these days?
I think, number one, I think stress is probably not given enough credit, but I think stress is a huge killer, because if you have stress, you're going to raise cortisol levels, and that's what kind of starts the whole hormonal imbalance that occurs. And if you look at just the rates of, you know, breast cancer, prostate cancer,
hormonal cancers,
it's all hormonal.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that, you know, diet is really important.
Mm-hmm.
You really are what you eat, because your cells can only rebuild themselves based on the fuel that you provide.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put in junk food, the next generation of cells that your body creates is going to be inferior to the previous generation.
Right.
That's how, you know, then we create conditions that are conducive for disease.
Right. Toxicity is big.
That's huge, because if your body is toxic, there's toxins in the cells. It doesn't matter how much good nutrients you put in, you may not be able to absorb in the cells.
Yeah, yeah, toxicity is massive. You know, one thing we've been learning a lot about lately is radiation from cell phones and mm-hmm. light.
Yes.
You know, like these lights here are just blue lights, so they're, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of blue spectrum lights. And and we had a doctor. Are you familiar with Dr. Jack Cruz?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He's talks all about this non-native
awesome.
Light and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he really, really impressed on me in a recent show. If people are interested in that, I think it's episode 460, I think, or somewhere
mm-hmm.
around there.
Mm-hmm.
Just this whole thing with light and looking into screens, looking into computers late at night, even light inside, even being inside and having your skin exposed to light, because you're mm-hmm. it's all photoreceptors in your skin, and
yes.
so you're still taking in light.
Yes.
And I just thought, it's so interesting. What if it were so simple as this exposure to blue light, especially like, you know, looking at screens and cell phones and things. What if it were as simple as that? If all this disease, and he talks about the effect on the mitochondria affects the DNA
yes.
expression, the gene expression, and all this stuff. And I just thought, wouldn't it be so surreal and so ironic and weird if all we had to do was stop looking and being exposed to so much blue light?
Wouldn't
that be just crazy? Like,
yeah.
people could just keep their diets and still just not expose themselves to blue light. I mean,
oh, I know.
I don't know if that's the case, but I mean, he makes a compelling case for that.
No, I really think he's got a good point. I don't know if you know Dr. Joseph Mercola.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was at a conference that he spoke at a few months ago, and he came in wearing these orange color goggles.
Oh, is that the truth about cancer?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw him on
that. Oh, did
that.
You see?
Yeah. That was awesome to see that. It's so funny, you know?
yeah. So he fully appreciates the harmful effects.
Yeah.
And I believe that. I really do. It changes everything. It changes melatonin production. So
then again, hormones.
And the hormones. And yeah. they've discovered that in people who have cancer, they all have low melatonin levels.
Have you heard, there's a couple doctors on our show talking about high-dose melatonin intravenously for cancer. Have you heard about that?
Oh, no, I haven't heard of it intravenously.
Yeah, it was really fascinating. I think it was like 60 milligrams or something.
Wow.
You know, I take every now and then, if I know I can sleep in and I've had a couple of rough days, I'll take a 10 milligram.
Mm-hmm.
And that just knocks me out. I'm just out. But I can't imagine 60. But they do that, I guess, for cancer. Because, you know, apparently it's melatonin is very much anti-cancer.
Yes.
It is, right?
Yes.
Because it's a hormone, right?
Right. It is a hormone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just so, I think that it's, what we're talking about on the Dr. Cruz show was that it's our disconnection from nature, I think, that's really causing, and I take it further. I think it's a disconnection from God, disconnection
mm-hmm.
from ourselves,
mm-hmm.
learning how to listen to your body, and
yes.
disconnection with other people.
Yes.
And I think that disconnection is what's causing, and disconnection with the earth.
Yes.
You know, and it's like all of this disconnection. The other day I was inside, it was raining, and I couldn't get outside. And so there's no sun, and I just couldn't mm-hmm. be outside. And I spent most of the day inside, and it just felt so, I just had to get out because I'd been spending more and more time outside and thinking, when I was a kid, I used to be outside for how many hours? 6-8 hours a day?
Right.
Skateboarding
yep.
and playing at the park. And
mm-hmm.
and as an adult, it seems like as you get older, you spend more and more time inside.
Yes, and sitting.
And sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so recently I got a stand-up desk so I don't sit anymore.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that helps. And but I think just being outside is one of the best things people could do. So simple.
Absolutely. It's very simple. Yeah, because the sun's frequencies, those are very healing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the air outside is negatively charged ions, which balances out, because when you're indoors, computers and all these electronics create positive ions, which are very damaging.
Yeah.
To the environment, damaging to your health.
You must have had a lot of that being working in physics and being in that field, computers. I did.
Absolutely. In fact, I know in one of my offices, I found out afterwards that there was a very high magnetic field in my office. And I know this because I have a tri-field meter that looks at EMF, you know.
I have one of those too.
Yeah.
You got to have one.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise you don't know.
Yeah.
And so every time I walked through the threshold, it wasn't even just near the computer. It was just in my office.
Wow.
It just pegged, the needle would peg to the right. And that was the year that preceded me getting the diagnosis. So, and I could tell when I was in that office environment that it literally felt like, you know, I could be happy, you know, on my way to work. And as soon as I walked into my office, it would be like, you know, kind of
really?
Like all systems down, you know.
Wow.
That's how it felt. And that's how I started feeling this kind of congestion, stagnancy in a pelvic area, because I was working extremely long hours, you know, the 16-hour days. And there was no sunlight. You know, I worked in an office with no windows and, you know,
indoors, breathing indoor air.
Yes.
It's interesting you say that, because I had the same exact situation. We just recently moved from San Clemente, which is a couple miles down the freeway, over to here. And one of the main reasons we moved, there's many reasons, but one of the main reasons was that exact same thing you were talking about with the ping on the tri-field.
Yes.
The magnetic.
Yes.
And so we did the first few years of our show. I got a tri-field maybe a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we're like, okay, we got to leave. We got to get out of here. Because I didn't realize this, but there was a smart meter that was downstairs and a little bit over,
mm-hmm.
probably about 15 feet away, that was covered up. And I didn't know where it was. And when you would walk into our old studio that was in our house, it was just, as soon as you walk in, the thing would just peg to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And I started just feeling like, it's hard because I don't know if I kind of just felt that I didn't like it,
mm-hmm.
but then, and then the tri-field kind of confirmed that.
Right.
But then
right.
I don't know if it was like the tri-field psychosomatically made me feel like, okay, something is wrong with this place. So now I feel bad because I know it. It was weird, but I knew I had to get out of there.
I think it's very real, because I got the tri-field after I had been at that office for a whole year.
Oh, really?
Because I was feeling so bad, and that's what compelled me to get a
to
tri-field
get
to see what's going on, and then it confirmed for
wow.
me. Yeah.
So do you do any measures now to mitigate the effects of all that, computers and, you know, your home? Do you do the EMF protection thing and all that?
Well, I do some. I don't have it fully mitigated, but I have the shield for the laptop, and on my cell phone, I've got a little chip from Premier Research Labs.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah.
What kind of little laptop thing do you use?
It's basically, I think it's an aluminum shield, I think, and
okay.
it actually blocks, like, I think 95%.
Is it something you put together, or did you buy it?
No, I just bought it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did you buy it? Do you remember?
I think you can get it from Tools for Wellness.
Okay. Mm-hmm. .com?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's the same place, I think, where I bought the tri-field meter from.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So now, do you have any symptoms? Do you said you get your blood checked every 6 months?
Yes.
And you're doing well?
Yeah, everything is well. Everything's normal. So.
And no symptoms of anything?
No. And I had a scan done too. Actually, I had an MRI done recently, and mm-hmm. and everything is looking good there as well.
I was going to ask you about MRIs. Do you think they're okay to do?
Actually, I don't think they're okay to do. I think you're exposing your body to high levels of, you know, magnetic fields, which have an impact. I mean, you think we have iron in our blood, and
mm-hmm.
you know, that moves, and so you're moving, you know, at the cellular level, at probably a kind of a rapid rate. So mm-hmm. I think there are harmful effects of it. I don't think they've come out with all the studies, but I think that it's probably better than an X-ray.
I've heard that. Better than CAT scans and PET scans and things.
Yeah, but even now there's a study that came out for ultrasounds, which we've all thought were safe, like for looking at the baby
right.
in the womb, and that has an effect as well.
I've heard that.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, it's kind of like...
Everywhere you go, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, some of these natural healers, they can actually sense and feel things, you know, in your body without the need to resort to some of these devices. And, you know, some might question that, but I met a woman who could smell if someone has cancer.
Oh, really? I've heard dogs can do that.
Yeah, dogs can do that. But this woman, she was able, I had her kind of,
wow,
you know, smell on me. And she said, well, no, all I can smell is a lot of vegetation and herbs and like dill. And
that's good. Wow, that's amazing. So now... So, okay, so what was the process like? How much time do you have? I want to make sure you get
going. I'm fine. I'm okay. I actually rescheduled the flight, so
okay.
I said I wouldn't be pressured.
Are you leaving to go back to the East Coast today or tomorrow?
No, I'm going to be out here a little longer because So
okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that, I mean, we've been going an hour 15, but I still want to know more. So it's
my time is yours.
Okay.
I kind of blocked essentially all day.
Awesome. Okay, cool. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. So now, where do we leave off? Like at what point did you start? So your friends and family, you had the, what was it? You had the, a person come and help you, your cousin and your...
I had a medical missionary.
Medical missionary.
Well. Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, you start radically doing all kinds of juicing and things?
Yeah. I mean, I just continued with the juicing. So even though things were going downhill rapidly, is that where you're going back to?
Yeah. Because I think that's where we left off. I'm just curious from when you first kind of got released from the hospital and the doctor.
Oh, okay.
And then what you started doing from then until now and how you're living now and mm-hmm. the process of healing and all that.
I just basically have continued on with all the things I learned as far as the diet goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still drink my green juices. I still, even when I travel, I carry my wheatgrass with me and my little juicer mm-hmm. and I juice daily.
You have the little wheatgrass juicer that does that?
Yeah,
I love those
things.
Little
manual. I love it too.
I know. It's great. It's plastic. You can take it anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just got to get some wheatgrass in here. You can grind it up or,
yeah, exactly.
Light it up, yeah.
It doesn't take long. I mean, people think it's such a big bother, but it's really not.
Yeah, because all you need is like an ounce, right? I mean, or a couple ounces?
About 2 ounces,
yeah.
And that takes about 5 minutes to do.
So you can just take that with you, and then you can get a tray of wheatgrass wherever you're traveling. If you're in somewhere, like you were saying before the show, California is great for that because there's all kinds of health food stores. Usually, most of them will have a tray of wheatgrass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can just buy that and then just juice it.
Yeah, and if not, I carry. I actually brought my wheatgrass with me from the East Coast.
a tray?
What I did is I cut it and I put it in these green bags that, you know, let the ethylene gas come out. So,
oh.
Yeah.
What kind of bags are those?
It's those green, I think they're called Debbie bags.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about those. Yeah. I heard Chris Carr talk about those bags.
Oh, okay.
Debbie
yeah.
something, right?
Debbie, yeah. They're just called Debbie.
Are they like organic or they let the gases out? Is that the deal?
Yeah, yeah. It's ethylene gas, I think, that basically causes your vegetation, you know, produce to wilt.
Oh.
And so you can keep wheatgrass in there, you know, for... 10 days.
Is that for all produce? You probably do all produce.
You could do all produce. You just have to make sure that the moisture is not on the produce anymore.
It's all dry before you put
it
in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh huh.
Wow. So you bring the people looking at you traveling are just going, who is this lady? What the hell is she doing with all this grass?
Yeah. One of the TSA agents says, wow, you've got your whole kitchen in here.
And your front lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah, wow. I bring my juices with me as well.
So you make them before and.
Yeah, and I carry them on board. I actually have a prescription.
Oh, really?
For juices, yeah.
From your doctor?
Yes.
Wow. So he'll let you, so the TSA agents will let you bring that in? I guess if you check it through, that's okay, right?
I don't check it through. I hand carry it with me.
And they allow you to do that?
They do. They just, you know, it takes extra time. They have to put the juice in some device to make sure it's not an explosive.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you look like the kind of person that would blow up a plane.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. So you probably travel with a bunch of powders too, yeah?
Yeah, powders, and I have my bag of supplements as well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. What kinds of supplements do you take?
I take, I do take an iron supplement because I do tend to get low in that. But I have vitamin D, I have vitamin C that's buffered, liposomal. And I've got some homeopathic remedies, like for the thyroid. And it's a lot. I have several, I have my enzymes, digestive enzymes.
Selenium.
Yeah. I have mineral drops. I have chlorophyll. And it's a lot. It's little droplets. I also have all my essential oils with me.
Oh, wow.
I have like thieves. I'm not sure you're familiar with that, but that helps to get rid of, you know, viruses. It's antimicrobial.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was just reading about that. T-H-I-E-V-E-S, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I've just been reading about that. Antibacterial, antifungal, right?
And antiviral.
Antiviral, okay. Yeah. And that's an essential oil?
It's an essential oil, but it's a combination and blend. I think it has cinnamon and cloves in there.
Wow, so you travel with a lot. And then when you're at home, you're doing all these supplements. Probably more stuff you do at home, right?
I have more stuff at home, yeah.
Yeah.
And I have, of course, my rebounder, you know, to keep me, you know, stimulate the lymphatic system and all that. But I do try to do things, you know, either from jogging or weightlifting when I'm traveling as well.
How often do you do rebounding?
I try to do that every day.
Yeah.
I really think that anyone with cancer, you know, they should probably do it every hour of the day for at least 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love rebounding. It just feels so good.
It does.
You know what feels the best with rebounding for me is that when I get up first thing in the morning, because I'm still kind of groggy and I'm kind of like waking up. And when you get on there, there's something about like the endorphins that it creates. It just makes you feel, kind of wakes you up.
It does, and it just brings oxygen into your cells, which feels really good.
Have you ever tried rebounding with oxygen? Have you ever heard about that?
I did. I have tried it.
How do you do that?
You basically have, you know, your oxygen tank and a cannula that you just put in your nose and, you know, have it close to the rebounder, and you just jump and, you know, you're breathing the oxygen in.
So you just kind of breathe through your nose while you're jumping? And you have to have an oxygen tank for that? Or an oxygen generator?
Or an oxygen generator, like the machine, yeah.
Okay, so it's not really a tank.
No, it's not the tank, yeah.
Do you do that a lot, or do you?
I don't do it a lot. I know I did it when I was at Hippocrates because they had that set up like that in their gym.
So you can rebound with oxygen. Or they call it exercise, EWAT, don't they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Exercise with oxygen.
Oxygen therapy.
Therapy. Wow, I've never done that, but I suspect that would be pretty powerful, but I wouldn't know where to get an oxygen generator. I guess you could look that up, right?
You can order it online.
Can you?
Yeah. When I was really sick with the cancer, I was almost going to order one because it just helps, you know, to keep your cells oxygenated, because I think that's really, if you look, you know, down at the mitochondrial level, it's really a mitochondrial dysfunction. It's an oxygen deficiency that kind of leads to, I think, you know, just a generation, creation of cancer cells.
Yeah, we had, I'm sure you're familiar with Ed McCabe.
Oh, yes.
What is he called? The oxygen. What's his book called? I forget what his book, oxygen. I forget what his book name is called. I have it at home.
Yeah, I'm thinking Paul Karch's book on hyperbaric oxygen.
Oh, okay.
Therapy. Yeah.
Yeah, this oxygen thing is, I think, would be really helpful to do, probably as a preventive, I think, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I
do. Even if you just want to, you know, not even necessarily exercise, but if you have like an infrared sauna and just to lay there and breathe in some oxygen is a good thing.
Do you do the sauna?
I do.
Yeah. Do you have, what kind of sauna do you have? Do you have a far infrared or near infrared?
I think it's a far. And I just have, it's a personal infrared where you just kind of lay down in this tube.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool. That's nice.
Yeah.
So you watch a little, or read, or just go to sleep, or
just lay there, you know, relax.
Yeah.
It's a good thing for me because I tend to be so active, and, you know, my mind's always engaged, so it's just relaxation.
Being a physicist, you're always thinking, right?
Sometimes I have a hard time shutting down the mind.
Do you do it every day?
I haven't. I was doing it every day when I had the cancer, and since I've gotten well, I've kind of gotten away from it.
Yeah.
But I still do it periodically, and especially even a regular sauna is, you know, if I can't get to an infrared sauna when I'm traveling.
What are your favorite things to do, like aside from eating and supplementation and stuff, like if you were to put everything else that you would do as a cancer preventative, like rebounding with oxygen or just rebounding, sauna, coffee enemas, mm-hmm. what are the things that you do and think that are working best for you that are outside of like smoothies and juicing and herbs and all that kind of stuff?
The other thing I think that's important is in, you know, the emotional wellness.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that, you know, maybe even get a therapist to talk to, because it's just important to kind of understand how you think and how that creates feelings, and, you know,
right.
it's a whole cascade.
Right.
And so, because I think it's important to kind of identify if you have core beliefs that may not serve you, you know, like, for example, if you think, I'm just not good enough, these are issues that I personally struggled with. I grew up feeling very insecure, mm-hmm. Just never trusting my own opinions. Everyone else's opinions were much more valuable than mine.
Yeah.
And I can't help but think that that had something to do as well with developing cancer, because I felt like I didn't really have a voice. And so that's why I just feel it's so important for anyone who has cancer to kind of identify where these areas might be, and not everyone might be the same area, but where there's emotional conflicts that may not have been resolved,
that's
you know,
a
whether
big
it's
one.
With your parents, you know, it's important to go back, even if it's something that occurred in your childhood, and you think, oh, it's no big deal, that was just too long ago. No, that's huge,
mm-hmm.
because anything that's not addressed, and you know, you might not consciously be thinking about it, but it has an energetic imprint
mm-hmm.
that is still at work in your cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I found immensely helpful, and I just can't emphasize it enough.
So how does that look for you? What kinds of things do you do? Prayer and meditation? Do you do gratitude work? Do you talk with someone, or how does it work? Some people do like dynamic meditation where they're screaming and yelling and kind of doing active meditation, you know. I think all these things are probably helpful.
Yeah, I like to do moving meditation too, mm-hmm. where I'm either jogging or walking, mm-hmm. and just trying to be fully present and just aware of nature, you know, looking at that bird or the plant or the deer that walks by, and just letting myself just fully be absorbed by the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know. I'm into photography too, and to me, when I'm behind the camera, it doesn't matter what's happening.
Yeah.
Like I could be bitten by, you know, bees and mosquitoes. If I want to capture that photo, I will do it. And I, you know, if someone can get lost and they're in the zone like that.
Yeah, there's something powerful about that, right?
Very powerful, very healing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and creating more instances in our life where we could be in those situations, mm-hmm. I think. Because it's very rare for people, unless they're doing something they really love.
That's right.
Because how often are you in a zone doing something you don't love? I can't think of any situations. Anytime I've been mm-hmm. in a zone, I like to surf a lot. And so when you're mm-hmm. surfing and you're paddling for a big wave, that one false move or one, if your foot doesn't go directly on the board where it needs to go and you're leaning the wrong way, when you're traveling at that high speed on a double overhead wave,
mm-hmm.
you could die. And so you're not thinking about if you're going to make rent.
Right.
You're not thinking about a diagnosis.
Right.
You know, you're thinking about, okay, this moment right now.
That's right.
And all of those moments, I used to love to run. I have a torn ACL, my knee, and mm-hmm. I never got surgery because I don't want to have surgery for it. But when I used to run, that was such a time where I could relate to what you're saying. It's like you're jogging and you're breathing rhythmically.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to sort of force yourself to go and regulate your breath and be in the moment and look at your surroundings. It's such an awesome, I think, moving meditation.
It is. And you just feel more, just fully connected to nature.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. It's such a great thing for that. I do some Qigong that allows me to do moving meditation. I like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about doing something you love, you know, whether it's a sport or photography or something creative, some outlet that you have where you're really connected to the moment and to yourself, and you have mm-hmm. to have that high level of concentration and just being in that zone right then and there. And that's always a time in everyone's life, and I think, that it's doing something you love to do.
That's right.
Something you just love to do. And I think that's probably why so few people experience it, is because they're always doing stuff they don't like to do.
Right. But, you know? Yeah, people, I think, maybe sometimes do things out of duty and obligation, mm-hmm. and that's really not the way to do things. That was huge in my life, and I just had to find ways to say, hey, you know what? It's okay to do something that brings me joy. In fact, that's really how you ought to be spending your life.
Yeah, right.
Really, I think we would all have less, you know, diseases and illnesses if we focused on doing what brings us greatest joy.
Gosh. I wish everybody could, you know? It's challenging because, you get into debt and you get into, you have to work and you have to pay off things and you have mortgages and then you have responsibilities. But if people can just create a time, even if it's just a little bit of time, if they like to do yoga or if they like to go mountain bike riding or mm-hmm. if they like to whatever activity, if they can just carve out even a once or twice a week where they can go do that activity, it's such an awesome experience and you feel so good.
You do.
You know?
You do. It's really important because I think those times give you opportunities to recharge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to do, I have so many little knick-knack injuries, but I injured my lower back a couple years ago in the gym.
Oh.
And at that time, I was doing jiu-jitsu. And mm-hmm. Jiu-jitsu is such an amazing sport, I think, because it allows you to, it's like a physical form of chess. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking 2-3 moves ahead. The other person is thinking 2-3 moves ahead. You have to regulate your breath. It's like an incredibly intense cardiovascular exercise, mm-hmm. but it feels like you're weightlifting as well. So it's like it's got every aspect of just being an amazing sport. But what was so cool about it was that you're just constantly in the flow of the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you're transitioning from one position, one move to the other. You're giving this, your opponent this so that he'll take it. And then you do that. And it's just this incredible flow. And it's exactly what you're talking about. You're just in that moment and it feels invigorated. Two hours goes by. You don't even know what happened.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I've taken Taekwondo and Judo before.
Oh, yeah.
It really is just total body engagement, uh-huh. And the mind, it's mm-hmm. all there. And yeah.
It's just great.
Yeah.
It's just great. Mm-hmm. So you think that aside from sort of health practices like supplementation and things, you think that the energetics or the spiritual connection is one of the biggest things people could work on?
I do. Spiritually, because I think that we really are spirit beings having a human experience. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important, especially for someone dealing with a life-threatening condition, that you get in touch with your spirituality, because that's what really gives you hope when everything around you says, well, there's no reason to hope, but there really is.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me a great deal of strength to be able to tap into that, because it's a strength and power that is just deeper and bigger than we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing we're disconnected from just in our modern cultures,
mm-hmm.
is religion, spirituality, and just getting in touch with all of that, I think it's ultimately, it's weird because I look at food and diet and nutrition as a stepping stone into that world. I think if you take it to the fullest extent, nutrition and diet leads to that, because
it
there's
does.
A spiritual reason yes. why we're pursuing. Are we afraid of dying? Is that why we were involved in this sort of path?
Mm-hmm.
Or
mm-hmm.
are we, so ultimately it becomes a reconnection with something deeper. And it's ultimately, why are people wanting to hold on so long to the physical body?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good thing, because we want to be around and to help people, but also asking that why question leads to a spiritual pursuit, I think, through food and nutrition.
It does. There's absolutely a connection there. I'm really glad you brought that out. I remember one time I went to a raw vegan restaurant and I brought a friend with me. And as she was eating it, she said, wow, I can really feel there's like a higher frequency vibration in this food, and it's spiritual. This helps you to connect spiritually.
Really? She mm-hmm. said that?
She did.
Was she following any kind of dietary path at the time?
I think she was just on, she's originally from Africa, and so mainly probably was eating African foods, but, you know, probably mixing with some American foods.
And she said that.
And she said that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And I really believe that. You know, even, you know, George, what's his name? You know, for the macrobiotic diet.
Oh, Makaku or? No, that's his.
Is it Cushy? Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
His last name, but
yeah.
But he actually said that he believed that if we, you know, because people that eat animals, that you know, they kind of pick up the frequencies from the fear and the adrenaline that's coursing through the animals before
right.
they get slaughtered, and so he believed that if everyone kind of adopted this more plant-based and a gentle way of cooking the foods, that that would actually help to eliminate war. You know, it would create a more peaceful attitude in human beings. And I think he has a point.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. You know, I really do mm-hmm. because it's, you know, it depends on what people, what kind of attitude people have preparing the food as well. Because mm-hmm. I like what you said about how he said to prepare your food in a gentle way. Because
mm-hmm.
even if we're eating plants, they're now showing that plants have some sort of consciousness.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
plants are connected to one another and will communicate with one another mm-hmm. based on predatory insects that are flying around and to change their leaves to bitter. There's even studies I've seen recently where they're showing that plants have the ability to anticipate being burned or cut. I mean, it's just so... preparing our food in such a way of having some kind of gratitude for it.
Yes.
Whether it's plant or animal.
It's huge.
So important.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Always giving thanks before you eat and just thanking the hands who, you know, prepared the food.
Yeah.
I think that's it can actually change the you know, structure of whatever you're eating.
Yeah, and help your body to understand what that is more.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading in this book over here, the Anastasia. Have you ever heard of the Anastasia series of books?
No, I haven't.
Well, she goes so far as to say it's a fictional book, but it's a story of this Russian businessman and somewhere in Russia that ends up meeting this young girl who lives in the forest in the wilderness of Russia, and so she teaches him all about some different aspects of life, spirituality. You know, raising children and food and disease and all that stuff. And one of the things she was saying was that to walk on the bare on the soil with your bare feet,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of toxins get removed from your bare feet or come out of your feet,
mm-hmm.
and so the toxins will connect to the soil, which connects to the seeds, and forms the seeds that what kind of properties to make so that food will be good for you.
Right.
And also putting like your saliva on the seed and then letting it dry and then planting that seed.
Wow.
So that the seed gets imbued with your genetic material and then knowingly creates the remedies that you need, kind of a thing. And
that's
just weird
beautiful.
Stuff.
I believe in that.
Yeah.
I really do.
I mean, it seems to make sense.
It does. Yeah. Because it's all input. It's all, you know, the plant can break down. You know, the saliva or, you know,
yeah.
even energetically, I think plants can sense your energy.
Yeah. Yeah. And making sure that we eat in a way that's filled with gratitude, I think is so important. I think it's so important.
Mm-hmm.
So what other practices do you do on a daily basis?
So, you know, I do outside of the diet, you mean?
Yeah. Or? I guess just everything that you do to support your health.
I wake up with gratitude and prayer. Mm-hmm. I might look at a scripture in a Bible and meditate on that, which I'll do throughout the day. And then I go from that to, you know, preparing my wheatgrass. And then after that, I might get on the rebounder or I might go outside. I switch it up depending on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Typically in the summer, in the morning, I'll be outside, you know, either jogging or walking, and then in the wintertime, I switch that to later in the afternoon.
Okay.
And I mainly just, that's typically how I, you know, run my days.
And do you get to work from home, or do you have somewhere?
I work from my home, but I have clients, and sometimes I will meet the clients. If they're local, I will go to where they are.
Okay.
So that I can help teach them how to, you know, do this type of lifestyle from their home.
It's a beautiful thing to be able to work from home, isn't it?
It's awesome.
Because without that, it's really challenging, because then you got to factor in environment, work environment, culture there, your food choices and how you're going to eat during the day. It's just really challenging.
It is. Yeah. The freedom is just to be able to create your own environment.
Yeah.
That's healthy. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're doing that. And so, are you working with people remote, not remotely, but I guess just around the world, people that contact you?
Yes, I am.
How do they do that? On Skype or mostly?
Yeah, the international ones, I usually use Skype with them. And then the local ones, I do phone or Skype. It's really up to the client what they want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what kinds of trends are you seeing with people? You said before the show, I can't remember what we recorded and what we didn't, but a lot of people younger now are coming down with cancer. I think we talked about that. What kind of other trends are you seeing with people that are contacting you?
I'm seeing that it really doesn't matter where in the world they are. They're still affected. What surprised me at one point in time was, like in India, because I think a lot of the Indians there, they're vegetarians, so I was thinking that, well, they would probably have, you know, lower rates of cancer, but... You know, they've contacted me as well from people from India with the exact same type of cancer that I had.
In fact.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there's several that I know of. And so it just kind of tells me that somehow, I don't know if it's the modern lifestyle, but it, you know, like we talked about earlier with the computers, the artificial lighting,
right?
Things like that. And, you know, EMFs and, you know, from cell phones. It's all taking a toll. And so I see, though, that what's really encouraging is that the body is very responsive. And so if you kind of put into practice, you know, these healthy dietary and lifestyle changes, you can see immense changes. I've had one particular client who, I can tell you, she came to me with 3 tumors in her right ovary. And within 1 month of working with her on her diet, the 3 tumors completely disappeared, and she canceled her surgery.
So she had another scan or a test of some kind?
Yeah. In fact, I was able to go with her to her appointment at the oncologist and hear her oncologist say that she was in full and complete remission.
Wow. So when people, what happens? They find you and they learn about your story and then they contact you?
Yeah, they contact me. I have a contact form on my website, and so that usually kicks it off, and I send them a health history form. They fill it out, give it back to me, and then I do a complimentary health history consultation with them, because I want to understand their health history.
Right.
And I want to share with them the approaches that I would take with them, and just see if, you know, that fits what they want to do.
So is there underlying, factors that you would see with a lot of the patients that come to you, or clients, I should say?
Mm-hmm.
Are they eating a certain way, or are they living a certain way that you can see these sort of factors that kind of show you trends with these people?
Yeah, I think most of the people, when they come to me, they, you know, some of them think they're eating healthy, but they are eating kind of everything, kind of like a standard American diet, but maybe a little bit more conscientious.
Okay.
But they realize somehow it's not doing what they want, because, you know, after all, they wouldn't have cancer, but there could be other factors, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I see is that in changing their diet, which is, you know, I think one of the most basic things anyone can do, they are noticing changes. They begin to feel better. They have more energy, and then they become more optimistic as well. And I think that all plays into one's health, you know.
Yeah.
Because they come to me, they're fearful. A lot of them are, you know, just like I was, just afraid of dying or suffering. And, you know, just the whole C word is just terrifying for most people. And so then when they come to me, I kind of work through that, because I see that, you know, if you have fear, it's not going to serve you, because there's this whole biochemical cascade that's going to take place that's going to weaken and dampen your immune system.
Right.
And so it's important to get to a place of peace. And, you know, like we said earlier about what brings you most joy, take the time to do that. You know, if you don't have to work, don't work, you know, because you don't need to have your energies split up or have work stresses to deal with on top of trying to, you know, reverse what's going on in your body.
Yeah, because all of that energy that creates that stress is needed, really, for healing.
Absolutely.
Are you finding that a lot of people, I lost my train of thought. Are they overwhelmed? Because there's a lot of, like, you know, when you, I would imagine if you grab the person, a person off the street, and then you tell them, okay, we have to start working on all these different areas of your life. And really it could be, you know, too much blue light, too much EMF, sleeping. How are you sleeping? How's your water? How's your food? What foods are you eating? And then what foods are you not eating? Because there's all kinds of great foods to eat, you know, apricot pits and kernels and all kinds of stuff that you could do. And so to develop a comprehensive program and then you give it to somebody, are they just overwhelmed? Like, or how do they start with step one, step two, and do something they could actually like, okay, this makes sense?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question. Most people, you're right, they are incredibly overwhelmed. And what I do is, you know, I have 7 steps to vibrant health. And so sometimes I might step through them, but depending on each client, we might do certain things in parallel. Okay. And what I do is I will actually show up at their house, go through their kitchen, refrigerator, pantry, teach them how to read all the labels and say, okay, this is good for you, this is not good for you. I'll bring them shopping, grocery shopping, wherever they shop at, and, you know, kind of teach them how to buy things that are healthy.
Don't go into the center of the grocery store now.
That's like, right. Yeah, stay you read my outside. Mind. Stay on the periphery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so they're initially overwhelmed, but then after a while, they figure it out. But it is a lot. I mean, you're really changing everything about your life. And that's that really is what's needed.
Oh, yeah.
It does take all of that and then some.
Yeah, it's kind of like for us, we're in this world and we've been in this world for quite some time. And so we understand all the different aspects of not just what causes disease, but what creates abundant health. And so there's all kinds of, there's all kinds of things to look at. But when you try to distill what you and I have been exposed to for so many years into, you know, a week or a couple hour conversation with someone, you know, I could understand them being completely overwhelmed, you know, that makes total sense. But you know what's so weird to me? It's so bizarre to me that we go through so much education in school, and yet we don't even know how to take care of ourselves. Like, how is it that we have to have someone like you go with someone to a grocery store and teach someone what's going to be good for them and what's not?
Yeah,
isn't that weird?
It is really weird. But I think some of that has to do with just, you know, if you think about the food industry and just all the marketing and advertisements that people are exposed to while watching television, you know, thinking that, oh, this Pop-Tart is just all I need for breakfast. It has, you know, all these added minerals and vitamins. And so it's sort of almost like a just massive, I think, brainwashing, for lack of a better term. And so it really, it's always amazing to me to see when I work with someone, all of a sudden their eyes open and they get it, you know, and they see, wow, you know, all this stuff that's processed that comes in a box or a bag, it's really not good for me. But, you know, it started, I don't know what year, you know, when the food industry started to kind of make all these convenience food, and maybe when women started to kind of move into the workforce, then that kind of, you know, Campbell's soup and just, you know, TV dinners came into the forefront. And so now we're kind of seeing the effects of that. And it's really kind of going back to nature and to, you know, back to food as it was intended for our bodies.
What a concept, right? TV dinners.
I know.
Isn't that so bizarre?
It is. I think it is.
I mean, it's a bizarre concept to have a dinner that you could just put in the microwave, for one, but to call it TV dinner, so the family gets together and throws 4 of these things in a microwave and sits around a TV and eats a TV dinner.
I know. Just like, if you think about it, it is weird. I remember meeting some people from, I think it was the Philippines, and they said to me, you know, we don't have as much materially as you all do here in this country, but what we have is relationships, because whereas you all sit in front of a TV and don't talk in the family, we entertain each other and we talk. And
yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
So different.
It is.
So different. And so the concept of a TV dinner kind of reminds me of, you know, someone on their way to work grabbing, you know, McDonald's sandwich or whatever, breakfast burrito or whatever they sell, and a coffee sitting in traffic on their way to work. You know, it's that same kind of concept.
It is. And it's interesting because I used to live sort of a very fast lifestyle too. And when I was working in NATO over in Belgium, I remember I used to eat lunch at my desk. So, you know, and I used the glass containers, but I had Italian colleagues who would say to me, "We don't want to smell your food here in the office. You know, it's lunchtime. You need to not eat at your desk. That's not healthy. You got to come down to the cafeteria and socialize with the rest of us."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Those were the Italians.
Yeah, yeah. But Germans, too. I mean, there were 26 different nations there at the time.
Wow.
And so that kind of, you know, opened my eyes and my perspective on that, because I used to think, oh, you know, you got to be productive. I think that's the American code word, you know, is we got to do this, we got to achieve, you know. And what I learned from being overseas is, no, you know, we do all these things, but relationship is important. You know, once you've established a relationship and there's trust, that makes the work go a lot smoother.
Yeah, we're caught up in that, aren't we? Production, achievements, goal setting. I mean, it's all great, but man, at what cost, you know?
Yeah, lose touch with yourself.
Yeah,
you really
definitely
do, because you're just so focused on achieving, and it's like, you know,
for what?
Yeah, exactly. For what? Because if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. You're not going to enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Yeah, yeah. I often say that. I mean, people that don't have their health, they don't have the energy. Like if someone's really into, you know, making clothing or whatever, you know, they have to have their health to be able to do any of those things. Without their health, they've got nothing.
Yeah, absolutely, you know? Nothing.
And
it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank, you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Justin. Thanks
I'm so
for
glad.
Having me.
Yeah, so people can, what is your website so people can contact you?
It's deannawon.com. So it's deannawon.com.
And they can book a consultation, or how does it work? They go to your contact form? And
Yeah. It's a schedule appointment now, and just, you know, just click it and it'll bring you to a form and you just fill it out. You know, give me a brief description of your condition or whatever you're, you know, concerned about.
And so you're working a lot with cancer patients.
Yes.
Are a lot of these people, are they trying to figure out which direction to go, natural or alternative, or there are people doing hybrid approaches?
Yeah, there are people doing hybrid approaches. I have some that have decided very firmly they're going to just do a holistic approach, and then I have others who are doing a conventional approach, but they want to be able to kind of strengthen their immune system using a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I have kind of the full spectrum.
It must be challenging for people to have had chemotherapy and radiation and then try to go natural, wouldn't it? Because then you have to deal with a whole separate set of factors of immune system crippling and things.
It is. It is very challenging. And I often kind of almost feel, you know, very, very sympathetic towards these people because I see them suffering. I mean, the chemo really just knocks people down significantly.
I've seen it.
And I mean, it slows down their thinking, and, you know, and so it's always encouraging to me though, that, you know, when I work with them on the diet and exercise and just, you know, emotional well-being and spiritual faith, I see these people getting better. So
that's so cool.
I know that it doesn't matter how far along someone is. There's always hope that they can turn it around. The body, like you said, just knows how to go back to homeostasis.
Well, you were 4 weeks to live, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is absolutely crazy. One other question I have. Are there a lot of oncologists will say that, you know, don't do anything like high-dose vitamin C or vitamin therapy or anything like that because it could interfere with the effectiveness of the chemo?
Mm-hmm.
And we know that chemotherapy is incredibly toxic to cells. It kills, has sort of no discrimination. It kills good cells, bad cells. And that's the issue with it. And people have been finding a lot of mitigation of the damaging effects of chemotherapy through the use of, you know, high dose vitamin C and things like that. Do you know of any targeted supplements, or can you think of anything offhand, or maybe that you help people with that help people mitigate the damaging effects of chemotherapy through the use of like mm-hmm. vitamins and different supplements?
Yeah, definitely the high dose vitamin C IVs, as well as glutathione. You could get that in IV as well.
And that will help if someone's doing chemo, but they don't want to be as ravaged by it. Is that right?
Absolutely. And then curcumin, you know, which is the active ingredient in turmeric root,
okay,
is also very powerful anti-inflammatory. Because I think when you're exposed to, you know, chemo or radiation, it really sets off a lot of inflammatory factors within the body as well, because you're, you know, kind of creating all these free radical damage throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really recommend, turmeric is very powerful.
I've heard there's so many people that we talked to, and I can't remember, but there was someone saying recently that they've had patients where they haven't even had them lose their hair to mm-hmm. chemo because
that's
of
right.
these supplements and things.
Yeah, that's very possible. I've known people like that as well.
Wow.
You know, I think that regardless of what direction someone wants to take, if they have a good diet, you know, healthy lifestyle, and they have supplements that are helping them, they're almost always going to fare better, even going through chemotherapy.
Even going through it, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's just too many people out there. I see, you know, this is a huge part of the work that I am trying to get out there and to let people know that they do have the option, and there are different options out there besides what your doctor tells you. And I just want to let people know that, and they can mm-hmm. choose whether or not they go to this person or that person or do chemo or not. But, you know, I see it as an opportunity for people to wake up and realize that we're living this disconnected life mm-hmm. and we need to reconnect with, like I said, ourselves, God, each other, the earth, and what it is we're supposed to be doing in this life. And I think that when you can reconnect in that way, the instances of cancer will be mitigated and lowered, because if we're connected to ourselves, we understand that we're not eating the right food.
Mm-hmm.
We're not treating ourselves, but
that's right.
It's only when you're disconnected that you don't know that.
That's right.
You know? And so, I think it's a problem. So I see so many people that are, you know, dealing with cancer. I mean, I could name a handful of people just that I know personally, they're dealing with cancer. And then mm-hmm. people on Facebook, and you hear of, you know, all these other people that you know of, but you don't know. And it's just an epidemic, this whole cancer thing.
It really is.
It just breaks my heart, because people should not be getting sick at such a young age.
No.
It's crazy.
It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong.
Yeah.
And the treatments that they have, the conventional treatments, I don't think it helps.
Yeah.
In majority of cancers.
There's only a couple that really mm-hmm. respond, from what I understand, to
That's
chemotherapy.
Right.
And and I think it's like a 2% or less, isn't it?
It is.
Success rate?
Yeah, and I think it's only testicular cancer and leukemia.
I think non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is another one.
And that one too, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. leukemia. Man, it's just so wrong. I see so much of it. And it's just, the problem is that it's so easy to live a life that is cancer promoting, because mm-hmm. it's comfortable.
Right.
And it's easy. You can get fast food, and it's easy. And it just perpetuates this whole kind of cycle that fosters tumor and cell growth.
It is. And it's hard. I mean, I think one of the toughest challenges is the social ramifications of when you're wanting to make these lifestyle changes. Because if your friends are not on board, then that creates a rift, you know, mm-hmm. and it becomes uncomfortable because, well, you know, you may not want to go to that restaurant because what they serve is not healthy.
Right. And then you're the health nut.
Yeah, that's right. You're the health nut. And yeah, and I've heard a lot of it, you know, even in my job, people would say, oh, you're paying to eat that rabbit food, you know?
Yeah.
So it is very tough, but, you know, it's definitely something that I think people need to kind of take a second look at. And if your friends aren't supportive, then maybe you need a new set of friends, you know, because mm-hmm. when you get with other people who, you know, really believe in having a healthy lifestyle, then it becomes much easier.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts finally on living a life that is anti-cancer, but then also not focusing on cancer so that it doesn't become something that dominates your life and your thought processes. So living a healthy, clean life that is anti-cancer, but then also focusing on, you know, have that sort of be like the what's in the background. And then instead of focusing on cancer and not ever getting it, focusing on what you're doing and positive things, laughing, having a good time, doing the work you love, spending time with people. What are your thoughts about making sure someone doesn't get sort of possessed with the idea of, oh, I'm doing all of this so I can prevent cancer?
Yeah, this is such an important point you raise, because I do run into people who are just, they become fearful. They're like, well, you know, I can only eat this, I can't eat that because it's going to cause cancer.
Right.
And I just, I try to explain that, you know, anytime you do things out of fear, you're going to kind of reap the consequences of that, and you're going to produce fruit from that fear. And so rather than coming from a place of fear, come from a place of love and peace and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way I look at it is, hey, you know, I'm grateful that I have this option to choose these plant-based foods, that it's going to make my body feel good. And when I feel good, then I'm going to be able to focus on my purpose, you know, and do what I'm supposed to do here on Earth. And
focus, you know, on all that.
Yeah, focus on all that. Don't focus on, well, yeah, you know, I got to do this so I don't get that. I mean, anything that's in the negative, you know, you might be able to achieve some results, but I think there's ultimately, you can become derailed like that, mm-hmm. too. So, I just think that just look at things from a positive perspective, you know, one where you have an option, you know, it doesn't matter if, you know, so-and-so in your family had whatever, you know, disease, diabetes, or whatever it might be. If you focus on eating so you don't get that, that's very different than saying, well, no, I want to choose to eat this because it's going to help make me feel better and bring me joy. Because there's such a deep connection between, you know, our gut and our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's studies that show that, you know, sometimes depression can be changed immediately if you just change someone's diet.
Right, right.
Yeah,
I've heard a lot about that, the gut-brain connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really important point, because a lot of times people get really obsessed in this world, you know, with dietary things and trying to, you know, people are weighing their food and only eating, you know, 800 calories a day kind of a thing, calorie restriction. But I think one of the things that's really helpful for people, and for me at least, is to focus on what kind of person can I become and what do I want to do,
mm-hmm.
and does my food and dietary choices perpetuate that and
yes.
facilitate that.
Yes.
And so if I want to have all the energy in the world because I want to go surfing every day, then I have to choose a diet that's going to, you know, allow me to do that. And so instead of focusing on, oh, I don't want to get sick, I don't want to get a cold, I don't want to get cancer, I don't want to get diabetes, so I, you know, focus all of my energy on that. But instead, if I'm focusing on where I want to go and what the food will help me get there, I think that's a much better and more positive way to, because you're focusing not on the negative, like you just said.
Yeah, because when you focus on a negative, it creates stress, and, mm-hmm. and you don't need more stress.
Yeah, especially not in this world.
Yeah, you gotta just, yeah, that's right.
Stressful enough, right?
It is, yeah, you don't need to add that. I've had people say to me, well, you know, it's hard enough to have cancer, but, you know, to have to focus on food, and see, so that's a totally different perspective than, well, oh, I have to focus on food versus, oh, wow, here's another option,
yeah,
you know, that I can get well.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. here it is, and this will allow me to do that thing I finally wanted to do my whole life anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so cool. I'm glad you're doing the work you're doing, and you're helping a lot of people.
I'm grateful. I really am. Like I said, just to have the option of just changing your diet and seeing the results, but of course doing it in an integrated approach.
So are you doing anything online with, in terms of any coaching digitally or programs or courses and things online?
Not yet, but I'm actually thinking about it.
Going to work on that?
I'm going to work on an online course.
A lot of people that you can't because, you know, with your time, you could only help so many people.
That's right.
Individually.
Yeah. And I do speaking engagements as well, because I think like that I can reach a lot more people than just working one-on-one.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're out here in LA for a couple conferences. Are they over and you're staying longer, or?
No, I just got done with one conference and there's a couple more coming. And then, like I said, I had a meeting with an MD as well for this documentary.
That's awesome. Yeah. What are the conferences?
Well, let's see. The one that I just came from was the Voice of Success. So it was a conference put on by Roger Love, who is actually the vocal coach for people like, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder, the Jacksons. And
no way.
Yeah, and so it was really interesting because I spent 3 days focused on voice.
Yeah.
Because what people don't realize is that, if you want to accomplish something, that anytime you meet someone, how you sound in your voice can often make a difference,
mm-hmm.
whether or not you're going to be successful in that interaction or have the influence that you want. And so I just really want to try to cover all the bases. And so I interacted. There were a lot of alternative and holistic practitioners there.
Really?
As well. Yes, because they have a message that they're trying to get out to the world. We all do. And
yeah.
So just finding, the best way to optimize, the voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. important. People need to know how to speak and speak well and passionately about mm-hmm. what they're doing.
And then I'm going to another conference, which is going to be in San Diego, actually. It's High Performance Academy, which actually talks about, optimizing not only your physiology, but your psychology, to be able to support what you're trying to do.
Is that with Brendon Burchard?
It is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you're familiar with him?
Yeah, I have one mm-hmm. of his programs. He's an energetic guy.
He sure is. he's amazing because he can talk for 4 days, 8 hours, and he doesn't lose his voice nor his energy.
Yeah, he's amazing. So High Performance Academy.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. And that is starting pretty soon?
It's March, I think.
So are you staying in LA until then?
I'm staying in LA until then.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's in March.
It's the beginning of March.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Have you been there before?
To his
academy?
I have. I've been to his other academies that are pretty helpful because, I spent, the 26 years in the Air Force and never thought I would be in the position to, create a business or become an entrepreneur. And so...
So different, right?
It's totally different. And the way I initially really shied away from it, but then I began to realize that, in order for me to have a greater impact on people, I do need to look at these processes to optimize them.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise my message won't get out.
Yeah. And it's like, in order for you, it's really a challenging thing because you have to get your message out, but then you also have to make sure you don't kill yourself in the process. Because a lot of times mm-hmm. people are just, I see a lot of people who are doing online business and things and they're, eating pizza and peanut butter sandwiches
right.
and they're, working 12 hours a day to get their business off the ground. Whereas, you and I can't do that.
No.
So all of the money that we make basically goes to pay bills and buy high quality food.
That's right.
It's like that's where
that's
all
so
our money
true.
Goes.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, I think my grocery is the largest bill that I have.
I know. It's crazy. Wow, so that's really cool. I've thought about going to his academy. You think it's worth it? Yeah, it's good.
I highly recommend it. I think Brendon Burchard is truly a world class trainer. He lives what he preaches, I just think he's awesome. He's very, usually you go to these things 4 days long, you're thinking, well, what could I possibly learn? Or it's going to be oversaturation, but he does it in an amazing way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he chunks it down so you can not only understand it, but he has you applying it right there on the spot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he challenges you to do it. And he shares, some of what he struggled with and how he overcame it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's really an inspiring person to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's really passionate, energetic, and he's got a simple message, but it's great,
Oh, it is.
And it's cool to be, I would imagine, around a lot of people that are interested in that too, because it's kind of outside the health field a little bit, but it's filled with people who are inspired and want to take action and have a message that they want to tell the world and help the, you know, make the world a better place.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of health practitioners that go there. I've met so many, you know, doctors, naturopathic physicians, energy healers. So it doesn't matter what, you know, from what walk of life you come from. I think anyone can benefit from just learning how to, you know, he talks about things like, you know, having a morning ritual, which I think is really important. So rather than as soon as you wake up, jumping on your email and responding to things, you know, have a ritual where you spend time meditating and, you know, becoming centered, and then get out there and exercise to get your metabolism going. And so it makes a lot of sense.
You know what I like about a lot of the personal growth? I guess you'd label him a personal growth kind of person.
Yeah, like personal development.
Yeah. What I like about that these days is that they're understanding the health piece too.
Yes.
Which is nice because back in the 80s, you know, there was no real connection between health and that. You know, like you wouldn't see them talking a lot, but now you have Anthony Robbins talking about you know, smoothies and alkalinity and things like that. And so you have a lot of these people. Frank Kern was doing that as well. And so it's nice to see that people are starting to understand that if you want to do amazing things in the world, you have to have your health, you know, be the foundational piece of that, because without that you can't do anything.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah.
And
that's
cool
key.
To see.
It is you know? Really cool to see, because I think people are starting to get it. They're becoming aware.
Yeah, you can't go out and do amazing things and be living on a diet of McDonald's.
No,
you know,
you're not going to be doing it for long.
Pizza and McDonald's. It's just, it's not going to facilitate that. I mean, I guess you could, but I think what would happen is that you would burn out.
You would.
You know, you'd burn out, and maybe you'd come down with a disease, or you'd have some sort of something happen. I mean, you know, it happens in just the regular corporate world. You know, people just get overweight, they get tired, and they, you know, because of their diet and their lifestyle. And so it's cool to see that people like him are interested in health and things.
Yeah, I think it is. I just think that there are ways to optimize everything about your life.
Yeah.
And why not do that? You know, why not feel at your best?
Right.
You know, why put up with, you know, mediocrity and just, you know, kind of hoping that you're going to survive the day? I'd rather have enough energy to sustain me. And then, you know, when you finally lay down to rest, you're like, oh, wow, you know, look at all the things that were accomplished today.
And you feel good about it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Lives that are touched, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Any other conferences you're attending?
Let's see. I talked about the Roger Love one.
High Performance Academy.
Yeah. That's mainly it.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So you are based on the East Coast, right?
Yes.
Whereabouts?
In Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Yeah.
The belly of the beast.
Yeah, it's kind of the center for all action.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so it's Deanna Wan, DeannaWon.com, right?
Yes.
DeannaWon.com, and they can contact you on there.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thanks so much, Justin. It's really been awesome to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have to say, I have been absolutely loving this product by Tristan Truscott and Peter Ragnar called Good Morning, Good Evening, Qigong. If you want to listen to the interview we did with Tristan, you can go to extremehealthradio.com/127. And Qigong is a great way to de-stress the body. And as you know, there's a huge component to disease caused by stress. And stress is a huge factor in how we live our lives and the amount of energy we have and the amount of vitality we have. And so, Dr. Shade, what do you think about Qigong?
People come to me and they're really sick and they got this blown out neurological system and all this toxicity. And I tell them, you need to do Qigong, Tai Chi. You need to do these things that settle down and restore your neurology, because it puts together all the parts. It puts you back into that state where you can start to detoxify. And so I highly, highly recommend all that.
And what about you, Kit Campbell? What do you think about Qigong? Do you like it as well?
Qigong is amazing. And the reason that I believe it to be amazing is everything here is energy. That is a scientific fact, if there ever is one. So when you're practicing Qigong, you're actually drawing energy into your body. Your intention, whatever your intention is behind any action, will determine the level of energy, type of energy that you absorb into your body. So your intention behind your is very important, just like thought. So when you're practicing Qigong, you're actually bringing energy in and you're bringing out the stuff that might be a bit stale. With Tai Chi, it's totally different. The energy runs underneath the skin because it's more of a martial, this is the Chinese understanding, by the way. It's more of a martial art. So Qigong is very, very good for bringing that energy into the body and just fantastic.
If you're interested in picking up this Qigong course by Tristan Truscott and Peter Ragnar, go to extremehealthradio.com/Qigong. That's Qigong. And you can learn more about it. There's a great video on that page, and you can learn more about it on that page. And I highly, highly recommend this product. I love it myself. So go ahead and check that out. extremehealthradio.com/Qigong. Okay, I hope you guys enjoyed that show. This is a little extra special bonus for the podcast listeners that is not available on the YouTube video of this particular show. But I hope you guys enjoyed that show with Deanna Wan. That was really fun. She was in town for a couple different conferences, which we talked about during the show. And she's a cool person, and her story is just amazing, isn't it? Man, oh man, to be able to come back from ovarian cancer like that and be on hospice with weeks to live and all the different struggles and things that she went through. Gosh, what a journey. What a journey she's been through. I can't even imagine. But it just goes to show you too, though, that what's possible, right? It's so much is possible with our health. You know, we have new liver cells and new cells in all of our body, you know, and, if we're able to build new cells out of almost nothing, what's possible for all of us to be able to overcome our health conditions, our health challenges, you know, it's amazing. And that's one of the things that I've been really, really kind of dialing in more with Kate lately and myself is just getting to the point where we're not looking to other people to, or are testing even, or what other experts have to say about what we should be doing with our health. And that's, you know, one of the things that I've been cultivating in my own mind is really just looking at all these people that we have on our show as just sort of guideposts. And, you know, all of them are just options and they're not necessarily the truth, because you know, what's true for one person may not be true for me, or it may be true for me, but just maybe it's not true for me right now. So it's really important to just look at what other people are doing and just draw inspiration from them, but not necessarily feel like we have to, what's the right term? Sort of give over our own power like we do to medical doctors, to natural doctors, and just transferring that power. In actuality, that power remains within us. And, you know, if one doctor says that bananas are the worst thing ever that you could eat, but your body, you know, loves bananas and your blood work is good and you feel great, then, you know, what that doctor has to say about bananas just doesn't apply to you. So I think it's really important for us to just look at what all of our guests are saying and just say, yeah, that's good. I like that. I like that. I don't like that. I don't agree with that. You know, what he's saying there, what she's saying there, I agree with, and this I don't agree with, because it's not something that I experience in my own life. And so, you know, getting to that point where we stop giving away power to anybody, because that's really the key, you know, is not giving your power over to anybody, because we have some really great guests on the show, as you probably know. I mean, you know, Dr. Bergman, Dr. Jockers, all kinds of really forward thinking and people who push the envelope and know a ton about natural health. But again, you know, if their information doesn't jive with how your body works, then it doesn't have to be anything other than just information that you can discard. So, you know, that's just a big thing that I've been working on lately is having the mindset and the ability for my own mind to be able to dictate how I feel and what level of health I need to be at, instead of letting other people dictate to me. Because, you know, one of the things we had recently is Kate is seeing Nikki Moses over at mosesnutrition.com. And her hair test analysis showed, she'd been kind of cheating on her diet a little bit, and it reflected in the hair test. But what we're talking about is that, you know, her hair tests, you know, systematically uses the word suggest, you know, your levels suggest XYZ. And what we're talking about is that it's not saying that it is indicative of that, because all of these things are just snapshots in time. You know, any test that you've ever had, any test I've ever had, these are just snapshots in time. Doesn't necessarily mean that's how my body's working in actuality right now. And so it's important to really realize that. And we can sort of cut through all of the testing and the theory and what everyone says through our own ability to tap into our own selves and our mindset of abundance and power and strength, and to be able to do that in a way that facilitates our own growth and our own health. And having that mindset, I think, is so important. You know, I think it's just, because otherwise we're going to be tossed to and fro, kicked around. This guy says this, maybe I'll try that. This guy says this diet's better, maybe I'll try that. This guy says XYZ, maybe I'll try that. And we just keep bouncing around from thing to thing to thing, instead of saying, you know, this is how I'm going to feel. And it starts with your mindset, and it starts with, you know, you choosing how you want to feel and how you want to act and how you want to be and how you want to receive information, and having that power within yourself. That's where it all starts. And I think it's just super important to tap into that. And that way, when someone comes along and says you should do XYZ, you can just say, well, no, that doesn't agree with me, or that doesn't jive with me very well. So, you know, to be able to tap into that and cultivate that, and that just comes through spiritual practice, spiritual growth, personal development, reading books, being silent, contemplation, and really tapping into who you are and what you are and what your, you know, what your purpose is here, and really dialing all of that in. And so that way you can take all of the guests that we have on as just suggestions and offers and ideas and just opinion, and not look to any one of our guests as like the end all be all, you know, because no one really knows what's going on in your body. You know, you could say sugar is the worst thing ever, but until someone opens you up at the exact moment that you eat sugar, and every single time you eat sugar for the rest of your life, they're never going to be able to tell you how your body reacts to sugar. But there's some general guidelines, and you can take that and you can look at your own experience and compare it with what people are saying. But as soon as you have an experience other than what some health guru is saying, then, you know, it's only then when you can start questioning what they're saying and start leaning to your own experience. And that's what we're all about here. So hope you guys enjoyed that show. It was really, really empowering. I think Deanna's story is great. And if you guys are interested or know anyone who has ovarian cancer, you might want to send them onto this show. Let's see. Make sure I get this correct. This was episode 509. So you can listen to it or send the link, extremehealthradio.com/509. And you'll be able to check out the sponsors of this show on that page as well. And thank you guys for visiting us on our sponsors. That helps keep the show free. Your donations are amazing through Patreon and PayPal. A lot of people set up monthly donations, and that helps a lot. So thank you for that. And also thank you for visiting our store. We're adding more products in there all the time. And so we've got a lot of the most cutting edge, unique health products in the world in our store. So thanks for checking that out. And also thanks for supporting us on Amazon too. We made it really easy, by the way, to support us on Amazon. If you like what the show and what we're doing, what we're all about, if you go to our website, you only have to do this one time. On the right-hand side, you'll see a link for Amazon. And then you'll see some text below that that says click and drag me. And what you can do is drag that text onto your desktop, no matter what PC or Mac you're using. And that'll create an icon that you can rename on your desktop. You can rename it like Amazon-EHR or something like that. And if you use that icon in the future, you don't even have to go to our website. Just use that icon to make your purchases on Amazon. That will redirect through our affiliate link and support the show. So that's a great way. That way you don't have to remember to go to our site, you know, every time you make a purchase there on Amazon. That's kind of hard to do. I forget too. So if you just drag that text onto your desktop, that'll create an icon, and you just have to use that, and that'll help support the show. So thanks for that. Really appreciate that. And also I want to let you guys know too, the Academy is opening up very soon in 2017. We're going to be launching an online membership community where we're going to be able to connect with each other, go through online courses. We're going to have courses on disease conditions, body functions. So we're going to be doing things on like digestion. We'll be doing webinars. You can do Q&A calls and get your questions answered. There'll be a forum and a community there. And we're going to be doing all kinds of really cutting edge stuff. And I'm really excited about this. So if you want to take your health to the next level, get answers to your health questions and make some friends and join a community of other like-minded, really cool people that listen to the show, we're going to be launching that pretty soon. And when we do, we're going to be doing a big old discount when we first launch it. So that will be a lifetime discount. It'll be a monthly fee to join, but we're going to be doing a massive discount for probably the first 7 to 10 days when it launches, and your price will never go up. So if you want to get in on that and let and be made aware when it launches, sign up to our membership site. I don't send any emails, you know, yet because it hasn't launched. But if you join the list, you'll be notified as soon as we launch and you'll get that discount if you're interested in that. So super excited about that. We've got a lot of cool ways to help serve people. And it's been kind of a journey of a labor of love for me. It's something that I want. So we're going to be covering everything from natural remedies to, you know, how to do certain things, how to do detox baths. Maybe we'll do guided cleanses 4 times a year with health experts so that we can all go through a cleanse together. We're going to be doing videos, how-to videos, you know, all kinds of cool stuff, man. There's so many different ways to empower people. So I'm super excited about that. So if you want to join that, just go to extremehealthradio.com/509 and you'll see our sponsors. You'll see that Amazon link and you'll see the Academy site there too that you can sign up for. And we'll let you know as soon as we launch on that. So anyway, thank you guys for sharing our shows on Facebook. Thanks for being a part of what we do, and your support is amazing. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. Stay tuned for more shows. We've got lots more shows coming down the pipe for you. So stay tuned for that. And if you ever need any help, let us know and we'll do our best to get back to you. Again, thanks for listening and rating on iTunes and subscribing and all that good stuff. We really appreciate it. Helps the show a lot when you guys do that. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, guys, we love you. We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment/cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader/viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.